Yo, Short Box Nation, this is Botter clocking in with a very quick announcement to make before we get on with the show. I'll be in Chicago attending C2E2, and if you'll be in Chicago attending the convention too, it means that you have a very unique opportunity to attend a live podcast show like never before. I'll be hosting a comic podcast crossover live show on Friday, April 26th. I'm going to be joined by very good friends of the show and frequent guest co-hosts like Chris Hacker from the Oblivion Bar podcast and Greg Ligtig from the First Issue Club. We're recording a live podcast show that's celebrating the best comics of the year so far. We're going to talk about the creators that are absolutely crushing it. And considering the people involved with the panel, you can expect a great time. You can expect the typical brand of comedy and entertainment. If you ever heard any of the other episodes where Chris and Greg have been guest co-hosts, you can expect that on steroids. So once again, if you're attending C2E2 this weekend and you're looking for something to do or you need a break from the convention floor and standing in lines, I highly encourage you to come sit in for this live podcast show taking place the Friday morning of the convention at 11:15 a.m. I'll have links to the room and the rest of the panel information in the show notes. So check that out if you'll be in Chicago. Come on out, sit in on the panel, and have a good time. Hopefully I get to meet you. With that being said, let's get this show started.
Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you the Short Box, Season 6. Yeah.
Cool.
At this point, I just feel like I'm just attacking.
With it. No,
well, you can attack him, but I have a different opinion on this. What you're going to say?
Okay,
I mean, at this point, you're having some sort of gripe against someone.
I don't have gripe. It's just like his like the Short Box posted something about Rick Remender, and then I immediately texted Barter on the side and be like, "Yo, this dude is not not a sure thing."
He was just dirty macking on the side, not directly.
No, what I'm going to tell you is I have a different opinion on like his thing and like a bunch of people in general.
Okay,
I have a different opinion on how they do television shows and the way they should do television shows.
And that's probably where something that I think me and you are going to agree upon.
Yeah,
or not agree upon.
Yes, very true.
It makes for way sexier. Sexier podcast.
If you agree, you don't. I mean, shit. The game is a game. You ready?
The pod is a pod.
Yeah, Walt is like really ready to go. Like it's business time.
Oh no! I mean, I marinated and I kicked it and I just held. Look, y'all been ready to go for the last 30 minutes.
He's very, very true.
Look,
and saying the game is the game is such a great explanation of just like. You know, you just understand the game.
Look, it is what it is. The game is the game. The shit is the shit.
So I would try to explain this to like any the like game I, is the game I would game. Try to explain this to anybody. Like, oh, why do you do it that way? Because the game is a game. That's it.
Yeah, look, the game is set up to where when I'm that character, I have to go straight.
Yo,
I walk this way. The whole time. That's how the game is the game.
Yo, fork in the road. I always went left.
Yo, man. Even if there's a fork in the road, you know, even if you go left, you know what? If you're playing a video game, the fork in the road it's gonna go left, but you're gonna be back on that straight fucking path.
Damn. Well, this is a comic book podcast, not a philosophical podcast.
Hey, man. Look,
you just can't help it at this point.
Since
you guys are so ambitious to go ahead and start, I think this is a good enough point as ever to go ahead and kickstart our episode this week, man. Short Box Nation, welcome to episode 292. For you first time listeners, I am your host. My name is Botter Milligan. I got my right hand man, Andrew Torres, here with me.
What's up?
And special guest co-host, birthday boy. Walter Gant.
Thank you for having me.
I'm just out here.
No, I need a real Walt introduction.
No, thank you for having me.
Yo, you've changed the ways in the short.
Well, that's oh, no, I'm out here on my NPR thing. Thank you for having me.
Last time we had you on the show was January. That was episode 275. So it's been a good bit, like almost 20 episodes.
But I mean, look, 20 episodes and then a lot of the Patreon stuff. It was a little bit more than that, man.
True. We've been putting in work.
Yeah, I've been putting in work. Look, my feed shows up. I'm like, okay, word. Yeah. Them boys pod.
Them boys pod. And for those of you unfamiliar, you know, tuning in for the first time, of course, welcome to the Short Box Podcast, Jacksonville, Florida's premier comic book and pop culture podcast. For those of you not in the know, Walter Gant
is a founding father of the Short Box, one of the founding members of the Short Box amongst, you know, us three here at the table.
Oh, no, this is the founding.
The founders.
Yeah, we the founders, man.
The founders, yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. The founders.
We the ones who went to the blue area on the moon and planted some crops.
Ooh, you get ahead. You get ahead. Pretty I good. Like it.
Seedlings, bro. Seedlings.
Kotati. Well, yes, the episode that you're listening to now is sponsored by Gotham City Limit, Jacksonville's premier location for comic books, collectibles, toys, and more, located on Southside Boulevard. You'll hear more about them later on in this episode, but tell them the Short Box sent you when you go, okay? And if this is your first time tuning in, might I recommend giving our previous episode a listen? It was actually a bonus episode that we released last week. It was titled Fantastic Four Live Show. Now, the story behind that is... Back in June, we held a secret live show. We invited a select group of Short Box patrons to join us for a live show focused on Roger Corman's unreleased 1994 Marvel movie, The Fantastic Four. And of course, we talked about the series of the same name. It was myself, Cesar, Ed, Drew's first live panel debut.
Very exciting for me.
Yeah, so I want to go to the show. Very exciting moment,
mask and all.
Yes, we played it safe. I want to go ahead and give a shout out to the patrons who joined us at that live show. It was appreciated when we have a chance to do something fun like that and give back to our listeners.
So and just to kind of let y'all know, my test results came back negative. COVID-19 negative, so I feel pretty good.
Yo, congrats, man.
After subjecting myself.
You thought you had that, Rona?
No, I didn't.
Not at all.
Job was basically one of those safe precautions because they want to be
able
to
work out. Not having a Rona.
It's very true. Yeah. So
if you want to give a listen to our previous episode, like I said, that was our Fantastic Four live show. Speaking about Short Box and patrons that joined that, I highly recommend, man, consider becoming a Short Box patron. Not only does it help us keep the lights on here at Short Box Studios, but you get to become a part of what Drew has dubbed the Short Box Elite.
Dollar a month.
Well, not all of it's a dollar. You know.
Look, hey. I started this Short Box shit, and I am a patron.
Yeah, that's how good it is.
Yeah, I started this shit. I started this Patreon shit, and this the motherfucking things I get.
Yeah. Okay, that's what you want. Can we start calling our Patreons the Illuminati? Like, can we just start making
up a name? I'm just asking. Short Box Elite.
We're not gonna call it the Illuminati. Yeah. Absolutely right. Not. Right. Not when people. Absolutely not. Not in this time. No. No.
But anyways, when you become a Short Box patron, you get access to exclusive bonus episodes, commercial free episodes, merch, as well as invites to secret live shows like we did last week. Check out our membership site at patreon.com/shortbox for more details. Speaking of patrons, I want to go ahead and give a round of applause and welcome our newest patron, Trey Namo. He signed up about a week or two ago, and he's actually been to a few of the podcaster meetups. So shout out to Trey.
Thank you, Trey.
Thank you, Trey. Welcome to the Short Box Patron
Nation. Is his name Trey, or is he like the third, and everyone calls him Trey?
Ooh.
Damn. No, it's T-R-E-Y. But that'd be a hard ass.
Oh, he's a Trey. Like, so he's a Trey.
Yeah, he's a Trey.
Trey.
He ain't a Trey. He ain't a Trey.
He ain't a Trey. He's a Trey.
He's a Trey.
Okay, cool.
What a lie.
Is his last name Tor? Like Trey Tor?
No, Trey Namo.
Okay, cool.
If he'd have been a third, then he could have been a Trey.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Next time I see Trey, I'm just gonna give him a three and see if he recognizes it. Because a real Trey, like you're saying, would
Short
recognize.
Short Box is not gang affiliated whatsoever. just to not let y'all know.
No, a Trey is not a gang affiliated thing.
That Barter just threw up his three.
I'm saying, because either he's gonna throw back a three, like I'm a three, Trey, because I'm three.
No. Trey.
Yeah, I know.
If he's an AE, then.
Well, it's EY. We give away too much of his info.
Right, EY. Right. I didn't know if he was an AE or EY.
Why, you got something against the AYs?
I mean, look, the game is the game. Again.
I feel like you can't just get away with just that.
Yeah, I'm going to get away with that. Yeah, I'm just going to keep this rolling. We just spent like 20 minutes on Trey's name. No, we done.
Yeah, we're moving on. So, Trey, welcome to the Short Box patrons. And I also want to give a special shout out to. Hey, another patron as well as a big supporter of the show. His name Tim Stacy. He is a comic book artist. He's got an Instagram. You can find it. But he sent a really nice just fan mail, man. He sent some prints, some art that he drew to the studio. So I'll be hanging that up. Big shout out to Tim Stacy and, of course, all of our supporters, man. Whether you – you know, send in fan mail, leave a voicemail for us to read, just have kind things to say, or you just listen to the show, you know, on a weekly basis, man. So it's always appreciated. Fellas, I want to ask, man, with this being episode 292 and us on the topic of being kind of like, you know, the founders, did y'all ever think that in this podcast would we get, you know, so close to 300?
No.
Yeah. Actually, thank you, dude. I disagree. I think, yeah. I think the only thing that kind of had it a little bit sketchy was that me and Drew moved.
Y'all did leave me kind of high and dry.
Yeah, I mean, look, man, I had to go for like work opportunities, bro. It wasn't like a high, and Drew was the same way.
Yeah.
So other than that,
300 episodes.
Yeah, like, no, I think we would just stay there. It would just still be 300 episodes.
Yeah, but it's just crazy to me that it's just like, yo, we're at 300 because we see all these acolytes of like comic books that go that far, and since we're a comic book podcast, the fact that like we treat every episode almost kind of like an issue,
yeah,
issues that we've had, issues that we like, it's just 300, it just feels good to like, you know, that puts them like, now, oh man,
technically we ain't there, I'm just asking, we're on the fast track to,
yeah,
to
as long as like these people don't, as long as the Rona don't get us all, then yeah
we're
either on, I mean and enough of us is dark skinned or dark enough to where like
you know, people be like sending me all these like, yo, the Rona is really harmful for the Black and Latino community.
Well, yeah, but that
you kind of feel like one of those.
But
criteria.
That gives it to a whole nother issue, and this is a comic book podcast.
Yeah, it's very true.
So what I will say is that it deals with the way we deal with healthcare and the way we deal with a lot of other shit in this country. But I'm not going to go into the details of all that shit now. Yeah, y'all know the vibes.
That's a different podcast. Yeah. That's our Thursday podcast. Yeah,
that's the bonus episode.
That's our bonus.
We have intelligent listeners. We don't need to handhold them. I want to keep this episode, you know, lighthearted. I mean, it's Walt's birthday. Me and Drew made the, you know, trip down here to visit you, see how you was doing, and record this episode. So one of the topics I wanted to kind of us to start off with, only because it makes for a good callback, because like I was saying, the last time that we was here was in January. That was episode 275.
You said 275, yeah.
And I can't think of the name off the top of my head. Oh,
Rumblings.
The Rumblings.
Rumblings. Rumblings. How do you forget such an epic word as rumbling?
Because it's almost 300
episodes.
Because
since then, me and Butter, I'm always rumblings.
But anyways, so when we were recording that episode, one of our big topics was Marvel's latest. Ooh, that thunder is coming in.
Yeah, real shit. Damn. I'm glad because it's hot as hell outside. Let some of this rain. Thor, that's a whole other story.
Thor was like, yo, the pod. But anyways, it was around the same time that Marvel had made the announcement that, you know, their big summer kind of crossover, a big event was going to be.
The first one they announced was Empire.
And we recorded our thoughts on that. It was like kind of just initially like, hey, what, you know, are we excited for it? What do we think as far as solicitations go? I think the blanket, I think vibe that we were all given was, I'll give it a shot. It looks interesting enough. I read Marvel. Why not? So, with that being said, at the time of this recording, Avengers Empire has come out, Road to Empire, and then Fantastic Four Empire. So, all of these kind of being like issue zero of this event before the big official number one. And Drew's showing me the checklist. So, we're really just in all the prelude issues have come out as far as Empire. I will say, if you've not read any of these issues, spoiler warning, we're definitely going
to
be touching on.
Oh, we're about to talk about these books. So that's a spoiler warning is already there. We talk about these books.
Yeah. Go ahead and skip around a little bit if you'd like. Gentlemen, I think we've all read the same issues, which include, like I said, Road, the Avengers issue, and the Fantastic Four issue. what are your thoughts?
Are we going to go issue to issue, or are we going to throw it up in the air and see what we think?
Just kind of overall. Like,
I don't want to deep dive it. We're not about to like issue by issue on this shit.
Basically, to add to this, like a lot of the stuff that we're reading is the writers on here are Al Ewing, Dan Slott, and then we have Robbie Thompson.
And then artist wise, it's Pepe Larrez.
Hold on, Robbie Thompson is writing one of these?
He did the Road to. And that's why this family shows up and it's Meet the Skrulls.
Oh,
that's why this Meet the Skrulls family is here, because this is basically his sequel. That book.
Yeah.
So I think it's only fair for the fact that this guy that came up with this 5-issue miniseries, they're like, all right, cool. This is going to be your story to kind of like start it off and let's pass it off to Al Ewing.
Well, let me ask this.
Let's see how this group project fucking pans out.
Let me ask this, because the real prelude issue that kicked off all this was Incoming, and that was released in December 2019.
I read Incoming.
Okay, so I think, Drew, you read it. I'm the only one that probably hasn't read Incoming. I read these other prelude issues.
Because it jumps around a lot.
Overall, I just want to hear your thoughts on the issues overall, and does it make you more or less excited to finish out the series, or do you think, this I'm going to sit this one out? Well,
I'm going to still read it. I don't know if I'm going to read it probably in more nefarious ways. I don't think I'll be out here buying anything outside of like the X-Men crossover portion, because Hickman is writing the X-Men portion of this book.
Okay.
And if there's one thing I've learned about like Hickman writing and then the way they're going to be doing X-Men books in general, at least for the next 3 years, is to just read anything that says an X. If that bitch say X, read the book.
Yeah.
That's it. So X-Men Empire, I'll be reading pretty tough. And then I'll be glancing at the other two. If I read anything, it'll just be regular Empire. Like, I won't be reading Fantastic Four Empire and Avengers
Empire. So none of the crossovers.
Like, yeah, I'll probably read the crossovers.
Because I think this was one that I wasn't expecting it to be. Looking at this checklist, it's insane. Like any kind that, of
any
Marvel,
other fucking Marvel crossover, it's just the same.
Look, this is the other big. Yeah. This is look. I'm a ride, but this is the biggest problem with like all these crossovers. That there's no reason why. I don't know. I'm just looking at this shit, and let's just say Let's say the 20 best selling Marvel books are all tied into this thing. So you got got Fantastic Four.
That makes sense.
I'm just going down a list. So I'm going to just name like the titles involved in this. So Fantastic Four is involved in this. X-Men is involved in this. Captain Marvel. The Union is something I don't even know about. So it says the Union 1. Okay, so then let me just go by anything that's just looking like it's
tied. I'm probably just going to save you time because that list is...
This is a list. I will say they did cancel this invasion of Wakanda, though. That did get canceled.
I feel like that doesn't really make a dent compared to how big this
list
is.
There are 40 books in this thing.
And looking at it, these books are all $5 a piece.
Yeah, yeah.
These are $5
an expensive
books.
Series.
If they want to know, look, anytime you want to make that argument on why people don't read more comic books, shit like that is the reason
honestly,
why.
Honestly, you're basing this entire book on something that Roy Thomas did in the Avengers series. Like, these are very much I would think he did like 6 or 7 issues. Like, let's just say that when they did these crossovers back in the day, it would just show up in Avengers and it'd be just a 6-issue miniseries.
Like, they weren't advertised like they are now as some big crossover.
I will say this real quick. I understand what you're saying. What I would say is this. The only books that should be crossing over with this storyline is Avengers, Fantastic Four.
That's it.
Captain Marvel.
Just
from what I've seen, what they're gonna if she's about to be the
Ronan the Accuser,
she's about to be the new Accuser, then that's gonna be kind of tied into her book. And if you want to use X Men because X Men is super hot, then use X Men, and that is it. Nothing else should be crossing over with this fucking book.
Yeah, no new titles should be made just because you want to tell a story
at
off of something.
All.
So, well, I'm still gonna stick with you right now.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? Was there anything? What did you think of the issues you read?
Oh, the actual issues I read are fine.
Was there any like key strong points or highlights that stand out to you?
I liked the Fantastic Four one.
I'm going to come up and agree with the Fantastic Four.
So the Fantastic Four issue is the strongest one of
I thought it was the strongest
the
one,
prelude.
But to me, but someone in this room had a different opinion.
Yeah, me. I think the Avengers is one. I think the Avengers issue, written by Al Ewing and Pepe Larraz, was a better...
What did you take from it?
Well, it was the issue that kind of broke down, I felt like it was the strongest issue of actually establishing the story for Empire, which is, it dealt with the callbacks to the Kree Skrull War, the Celestial Madonna stuff from the 1970s. So it gave that background of like, hey, here is why the Kree and Skrulls have always been fighting. Here is this third party that you might have forgot of, the Kotati.
That
right.
That Road to Empire books explained all that shit.
I think. That's the thing about. I feel like this prelude is like, yo, a lot of it's kind of redundant. I could have done with honestly without the Avengers or Fantastic Four, and just why don't you just tell me the background and just Road.
I felt like the Fantastic Four one was less redundant for the reason that it brought in the woman.
Oh, the Profiteer.
The Profiteer.
But I mean, what did, that's my thing is if that felt like a really good FF single standalone, it didn't feel like it belonged to this, you know, big crossover.
It felt really removed. It just basically was the Fantastic Four that go to this casino and they see kids fighting it out, and then they kidnap them.
Yeah, and it was like, no, we're not going to let kids fight.
Yeah, okay. There's no reason why this happens. And then at the end, spoiler, it's revealed that they basically transported into like a fucking huge armada.
So I guess can we ask a bigger question is this. Does this book need to exist?
Yo, this is Botter. Sorry for interrupting this episode, but I'll keep it brief. I wanted to let you know about a massive sale we have going on over at the Short Box Store on all of our merchandise and apparel. That's theshortboxstore.bigcartel.com. You can now save 20% off your entire order using the discount code YO, Y-O-O. So if you've been waiting for the right time to finally buy that gauntlet snapback, or if you ever wanted to buy any of the shirts you see me wear on the podcast, well, now's your chance to get them for a steal. We still have a few sizes left of everything, but they won't last long, and once they're gone, they are gone. And did I mention that all of our apparel is screen printed on high quality material? None of that heat transfer or direct to garment stuff. Our shirts are some of the most comfortable ones you'll ever wear, and the hats look even better in person. So wear your support for the Short Box Nation proudly, knowing that you're gonna look damn good doing it. Get to theshortboxstore.bigcartel.com as soon as you can, and don't forget to use that discount code YO, Y-O-O, to save 20% off your entire order. All of this information can be found in this episode's show notes if you want to get there faster. Thanks for not pressing fast forward. Now back to the show.
No.
Well.
No, I feel like this is honestly just very, very much a good... For my opinion, honestly, this is just Marvel running out of ideas of things to do and understanding that like all the stuff that they're recycling is not hitting. And then they're like, all right, well, what else can we use? And I honestly think they went to Al Ewing and Dan Slott and they're like, what would you do?
Okay, so let me ask this question. Would it have made more sense for this in essence to be like a more of a Guardians of the Galaxy type of story? To where like...
Hold on, go ahead.
Run with this idea though. I'm just freestyling now.
I apologize. Go ahead.
Don't worry about it, man. Because they already fucked up the Inhumans.
Uh-huh.
So would it make more sense for, let's say, Hulkling links up with the Inhumans and then they link up with the remaining Skrulls and they just populate a planet and you just grab all these people together and then become the in essence, Hulkling is supposed to be the king that was promised. He's basically Jon fucking Snow is what it seemed like.
Yeah.
So if he's going to be Jon Snow, just let Jon Snow run his own planet. Mm-hmm. And then deal with the repercussions of like, what would be the galactic repercussions of the Kree and Skrull War officially ending with both of them all running a planet together.
So that was one element.
Should be a better idea than like, okay, we're just going to go to Earth.
Yeah, I'm kind of tired of that.
Yeah, don't come to Earth.
I say keep it Avengers related because... Hey, Shortbox Nation. Sorry for the interruption. Just a few quick words from our sponsor and we'll get right back to the show. Yeah, so this is where I pick up my comics.
Excuse me, might I remind you the rules here at No Touch Collectibles? No loitering, no friendship, no touching the merchandise without gloves, and no free bags and boards.
Yeah, man, I know. This shop sucks. I don't even know why I shop here.
Well, we could go to...
Jacksonville premier location for comic books, collectibles, toys, and more.
You okay?
At Gotham City Limits, you get 10% off comic books in your paw. 20% off trade paperbacks and hardcovers, 10% off high-end figures and statues, and free bags and boards. It's practically criminal.
And that's why Gotham City Limits is a place of the people.
How many times have you watched the Batman trilogy?
I'm ashamed to say.
Well, I mean, they're not bad.
One time for every time the Joker has taken the city hostage.
Are you done with that?
Yeah, I'm done.
Well... let's just go take our business there.
Gotham City Limits. It's the comic book shop Jax deserves, but not the one.
All right, I get it. It's a great shop. Let's just go. That the Kree Skrull War is always, I mean, the Avengers weren't involved in that. I mean, if this is supposed to be calling back, be a callback
and a
to
younger
those,
Bridger's involved
to those
I,
1970s.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. But to your point, you did bring up something that I did like from that FF story was, in this current, the story is that what the Kree and the Skrulls have made an alliance, and because of them making an alliance, the intergalactic economy is ruined because
correct,
which I thought was really interesting. Was like, damn, okay, they're talking about, you know, like war kind of being for profit
people and
shit like
that. Into
that so
shit.
I was like, damn, that's really interesting.
That's a saga point that they always make in saga about this thing. Yeah,
but I didn't think.
Yeah, I just told Barry when I was reading this, I was like, this is basically saga. Definitely, this to me is basically they read Saga and they're like, all right, let's just do something kind of like
Saga
this.
It's Saga slightly.
Yeah, Saga.
Like it's like Saga-ish because what they're doing is going on like the history of those things. What they've tied into though, and we talked about that Meet the Skrulls book is this slept on gem of last year.
Hey, I would agree. I would definitely agree.
I can't think of a better book that no one read.
Yeah, yo, I say Meet the Skrulls is basically that was the Fantastic Four.
I read it. I was all right.
He didn't like it because of there's a couple points that he was upset about. One being is the guy.
We're not going to go into the point what he was saying. My thing would be more, what do you think was better than Meet the Skrulls that no one read that was good last year?
That no one read?
Yeah.
I got to think about that.
Okay, I'm cool. So we'll come back to that. We'll loop back around. All right. Yeah, we'll loop back around.
You know, it's funny. Here's the thing. Now talking to you and seeing how everything is, the road. All right. So we had the Road to Empire, Avengers Empire.
Had Incoming.
Yeah.
Okay.
Really, let's go Meet the Skrulls, Incoming, Road to Empire, Avengers Empire, and Fantastic Four Empire. And Empire 1 comes out Wednesday.
Wednesday. Yep. So I had to say the ones that I think is the weakest.
Oh, that's today. When this drops, that'll be today?
Yeah.
Okay,
honestly,
so
the Avengers Empire.
Why?
The reason why I think so is because it's the recycling of Tony Stark and Carol Danvers. I'm really tired of Tony Stark and I'm really tired of Carol Danvers' his entire like fight and the fact that like
that didn't seem to me like a fight between them, but it's probably gonna become that a little bit. The thing I kind of dug at least in this Avengers book was they expounded a little bit more on those plant people.
To the Katati? Yeah.
Oh, the Katati?
Yes.
Yeah, because then you meet him. You meet him in this one, right?
And that's where I give this series some a nod. Was in true Al Ewing, and I'm giving Al Ewing most of the credit. I mean, for all I know, Dan Slott probably had a big hand, but I'm going to say Al Ewing because I think he's kind of like the runner on this, along with Robbie Thompson. Al Ewing has this uncanny ability of just sort of like a Grant Morrison. Like, he just knows a lot of, like, trivia and Marvel history.
He's good, yeah.
And it's very apparent in Immortal Hulk, if you're reading Immortal Hulk, because
God, that book is so fucking good, right? So good, yeah.
But I think a big part of the reason why that book is so good is because he is able to pull...
He's Mark Waid. He's new Mark Waid.
He's able to pull, like, these old, like, characters and these old story points and bring them to, like, modern times and give a fresh twist. I think that's what's pretty cool so far is that he's taken, like I said, the Kree Skrull War that, you know, maybe some of us have read from the 70s. But I know a lot of people have not read the other story arc that he references. The Celestial Madonna, as well as that Fantastic Four
it's
annual.
John Byrne, the John Byrne Fantastic Four.
Yeah, that's the annual. But like, I remember, like, yo, my dad had them issues. I just never cared to read it because I was like, I don't really care about the Krees or the Skrulls or the Celestial or, you know, Madonna or the Celestial Mantis. I'm sorry. So it's kind of cool that he was able to take that and say, now we can expand on this a little more. Now, granted, that's just what Marvel does at this point with their big events is what I feel like is like they rarely in the recent years have had a brand new idea. That's why all of their advertising is always, yo, this is 20 years in the making. It's not, it didn't take y'all 20 years to make this story. You're just saying 20 years because you're building on something that was already
something
told
that was happening was already
from
told.
The 80s, 70s.
Because I guess that boils down to more of no idea is original, period. And regardless of how creative all these people are, you still have so much folklore, you have so much lore yeah. behind you, then you can't just be out here like for real, adjusting too much of the backlog.
Oh yeah,
that they gave Hickman as much room as they gave him on X-Men.
Yeah,
is a bonus, and it was kind of the same thing with I was about to say something else, but then I just realized that was Hickman too. So Hickman just gets like, oh, I tell you what, Brubaker.
Mm-hmm.
So we can always just, I guess we can always go back to Bucky. All roads lead to Bucky. In a day they said Bucky can live.
Everything was all on the table.
Everything is on the table.
Everything is on the table.
Everything is on the table, and we can adjust and deal with stuff as we see fit.
Because since Bucky's come back, they've brought back Uncle Ben. They've brought back Gwen Stacy.
No, I don't think they haven't brought back Uncle Ben.
Uncle Ben is like Gwen Stacy.
They did.
One.
They did in the big.
Was he a clone? Let me ask that.
Yeah, he was definitely a clone. Yeah,
no. Count. They ain't brought him back, bro.
But for the longest time, you didn't know that they were a clone. You just thought that this was the original person. In the sense, I'm talking about this because it's on Dan Slott's Clone Saga that he wrote.
Okay.
Did you ever read that one?
Nah, because I'm not the world's biggest Spider-Man person. Yeah.
So that was over there tackled where I was like, all right, cool. That like nobody is unscathed or untouched when it comes down to Marvel.
Drew, will you be? Will you continue on Empire or
no? To be honest, I'll wait for this to be completed. Talk shit while it's going on, and then like a year later, come and be like, "I was so wrong."
So you're gonna be out here messy as shit, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
So, what was it missing that doesn't get your dollars going forward?
Honestly, it's just when I flipped to the back page and I saw the checklist.
It's really daunting.
The checklist is insane.
Checklist was the one thing that I was just like, yeah, I can't justify doing all this ever again. I'll just wait for the complete series.
I remember what book was that? Did you say I'm gonna read all these books?
Oh my god, I wanted to read every one of those books. Oh, what crossover was it?
I think it was like that Thor one.
It was the Thor one. It was the Thor War of Realms. That like I wanted to read every single one and get it in and out. And then when they kept it was 72 titles or some shit like that.
So, you know, I feel like we have this conversation a lot about like when we talk about Marvel's big summer hits, it always kind of comes down to, you know, it's just too daunting. It's too expensive.
Read the main book.
So I've always been curious, like, because I mean, Drew, me and you working in shops. And in a comic shop, we've seen people who will come in and buy all the tie-ins. And it's always kind of fascinating to me, like, man, that's that completionist collector. You know, the collector that's like, I need every piece. But I came across a Reddit thread or a discussion thread on a website about one of these issues. And there was a guy that chimed in. There was someone that chimed in and said, I really like these big events. Because I like to see how, especially the tie-ins, because I like to see how, you know, writers take this theme and work it in with a character, even if they're not directly involved. Like, for example, maybe how would Black Panther be impacted by a story like this? And it was just kind of interesting to see that perspective from someone who enjoys tie-ins. Meanwhile, you know, we're sitting here like, ugh. Man,
absolutely not. I'm only going to read the tie-ins on the books that involve that I normally read.
But I'm saying, if Black Panther's on Avengers, why do I need a Black Panther book?
That's a good point. I'm saying,
he's already in the Avengers. He's already being infected. And you want to give me three issues of basically him in Wakanda? Get the fuck out of here.
A part of me thinks it may have the same appeal as how some people really enjoy Elseworld titles where it's like out of the main continuity. I think a lot of times really good tie-ins that I've read sometimes feel like that, where it's like, oh, this is outside of the normal canon. This is kind of like a what if or a, you know.
Okay, well, let me ask you that. All the events that me and you and all of us have read, we've read a lot. Can you say anything that's off the top of your head that was basically a tie-in to a big event that you liked?
Oh, hell yeah. The World War Hulk, the X-Men tie-in series was amazing. And then the...
Wait, World War Hulk and X-Men?
Yeah, that was a great tie-in.
You know, I would say I read a bunch of Secret War tie-in books, and more than one of those was good.
Oh, and then when Invasion...
But that's Hickman, right?
Hickman was only writing just regular Secret Wars. So like, everyone else was kind of like fucking around.
Like the War Zone stuff where they basically were taking all the properties.
Books,
and like,
some of those books were kind of good.
Okay. Infinity? Oh, yeah, Infinity had a really good Black Panther tie-in. That's the one where Thanos's what was it, the big rock dude name? I cannot think of his name, but one of his Black Order dudes went to Wakanda to try to take it down.
He got his ass whipped.
And you know what? I think they actually rehashed that because in Invasion, the Skrulls tried to take over Wakanda, and there was like a Black Panther three-part tie-in, like a three-issue tie-in. That shit was amazing. So some of those tie-ins are really
good. Some of those tie-ins are good,
but I don't know if they're good anymore because I don't buy enough of them.
Like the argument is that should they even exist? Regardless of how good they are, they shouldn't exist.
Once you kind of take the blindfold off, it's like, nah, this is just a money grab. And like you would say, well, the game is the game.
Yeah, no, they're gonna eat.
Yeah.
And what messed them up this year, and now what messed them up this year is that we're in a pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
definitely don't got the money for this.
Motherfuckers ain't like just got like extra like this is a looking at that list, even if you remove the Black Panther books, you're still looking at, a $300 investment.
And that's why when you said it, I kind of rolled my eyes because it's like, yeah, two issues of, you know, whatever, 50, 60.
Yeah.
My other gripe when it comes to big events, they lose like that sense of like grandeur because just today, Ed went ahead and posted on the short box page that they're doing a big and hell, Walt, you brought it up this morning.
I brought it up because I read it this morning. The Knoll guy.
Yeah, the Knoll.
My eyes are rolling.
I forget the name of that. Whatever the name of the series is.
Knoll.
Yeah, Knoll. They've already announced a big series coming up, and so we got Empire, that's coming up, and there's one more,
that's
right?
That's X of Swords.
X of Swords,
so
right?
Basically, it's supposed to be Empire, X of Swords, and then the Knoll thing. Empire and Knoll will deal with a bunch of different titles. The X of Swords is just a straight-up X-Men crossover book.
Is it?
Yeah, it's only
self-contained to only X titles?
Self-contained to only X titles. Mm. So unless you are like a sociopath like me who's reading all the X-Men books.
See, I feel like a fix or something that Marvel could do to kind of encourage like these events where I'd be a little less is if they drop the price for the events where it's like it's 60 issues if you want the full story. I think and we're also overlooking that it's not like those tie-in issues will have a big part in the main story. I always go with if it's
the main story should be six. War of the Realms tie-in stories are all good, like legit. Mm. I will say. All those stories are actually good.
The War of Realms?
Like, the complete War of Realms. Like, legit. Like, that whole storyline is good.
Well, actually, let me ask this. Knowing that the tie-ins are sometimes just a money grab or just that won't have an impact in the main story, what's stopping you guys from pursuing just the main story? Like, well, you said that you would probably consider just the main Empire issues.
Yeah.
The main stories, which is probably like six or seven issues. Drew, would you consider, based on what you've read, do you like it enough to consider buying the main story? Or are you just like, I've seen it?
Probably, honestly, like, I would reserve my right to just answer that question until I read Empire 1 to see exactly like how much information they're going to give me. If it's going to be one of those books that jumps a lot where they're going to reference a lot of different stuff and I can't just read the Empire as a fan.
I feel like Marvel's tried their best. At least they've advertised, hey, we hear you. You don't need to read the tie-ins aren't going to have a big impact. You could just read this.
Then why have them?
That's the question.
See, now I just realized I probably need to call my shop today and tell him to put Empire on my pull.
It's from what I've kind of gleaned from these initial stories, it almost feels like we're going to experience basically an intergalactic civil war where it's going to pit the Avengers against the Fantastic Four because they're going to be on opposite sides of the house.
See, I don't think that's going to be what's going to happen at all.
Why not? Because, I mean,
I don't think that's what's going to happen.
Well,
I just think they're going to be playing two different sides of the same coin.
Okay. I feel like we're
saying
the same thing.
I don't think they're going to be fighting against each other in this. I think, if anything, you're going to see kind of like breakaways like with the with the Captain Marvel portion of this.
Well, I'm saying
that would probably be the only pull-away book I would actually read on this would be Captain Marvel. If she brought it around here with an accuser...
Hammered.
I kind of want to see what the vibe is.
The story thus far is that we got the Avengers teaming up with this with the plant species Kotati because of what they've caused for the Kree-Skrull War. The Kree and Skrulls have become an alliance underneath the Hulkling, And the Fantastic Four happened to be caught up on their side of things.
But what are they caught up on? The only thing that the Fantastic Four did was they rescued, two kids.
Yeah, they rescued two kids.
So, like, nothing to them is out of the sense of, like, no, we want to get these two kids home and safe. Because at some point, like...
And these people are trying to invade Earth. I just cannot fathom the Fantastic Four or the Avengers about to be siding with these people.
That's
like
fair.
This.
That's fair.
Like, yo, yeah, we totally understand.
No shit, I don't know.
I do like your suggestion, Walt, where it's like, well, this don't need to be a replayed, you know, Earth is being invaded. I feel like a lot of the big intergalactic crossovers are always that, where it's like, hey, the Earth is being invaded. I mean, Infinity was that premise, you know? I think it would have been cool.
Oh, no, Infinity was not that premise.
It was definitely that premise. That was
Thanos was only coming to Earth to, like, get his kid.
Still, Earth is being invaded.
The bigger issue with Infinity was that
anyway. He was going
to
destroy
Infinity
it.
Was leading to, like, Secret Wars.
That first half was about, like, that intergalactic conflict. Yeah. But it ended up being like, oh,
Thanos out here wilding again. Yeah. So somebody got to stop Thanos' crazy ass.
Yeah. So,
Thanos out here tripping.
I want to move on to this next topic. I'm kind of in the same boat with you guys where these prelude issues weren't enough for me to.
Who is in this Jungian book? Wait a minute.
Which one? Oh. These prelude issues weren't enough for me to really hop on the bandwagon. And I think because it's just not new enough. It's not fresh enough. Like, I mean, Drew, like, to your point, we've lived through a bunch of the big Marvel crossovers. This don't feel that different. It did, though, make me want to read the stories that influenced this because I have not read a lot of those Roy Thomas Avengers from the 70s. So I want to actually read Kree Skrull War because it's like, damn, that is an iconic Avengers story arc, and I've never read it.
Yeah, and... do you care? And here's the thing. I hate that, like, ask this question like that. Do you give a flying whatever about the Kree or Skrull? Like, are you one of the people that, like, care about...
I kind of like the Kree.
I kind of
rock with the Kree a little bit. The Kree are always good.
I have a respect for the Skrulls only because when Secret Invasion, like, that big Marvel crossover from the mid-2000s was popping off, I loved the promo. I thought the rollout was fantastic. Yeah. I thought that was, like, a great story arc.
And to me, the Kree are always just kind of interesting. Hmm. Yeah. But we'll see. Yeah. And to be fair to everyone involved, Al Ewing and Dan Slott are dope.
I am here for more of that because the fact that we've got Al Ewing, Dan Slott, and then, you know, Robbie Thompson, it's kind of cool to see, like, this multiple generation of writers and esteemed Marvel writers at that. Like, Al Ewing is very respected. Dan Slott, for, you know, better or worse, is a powerhouse when it comes to, like, writing for Marvel. And then Robbie Thompson, I think, is, like, kind of like the young gun.
Definitely
on the
is.
Scene. So I'm here for more, like, collaborative collaboration between writers doing events. I think that's
where it's at. Yeah, and on top of that, they got Pepe LaRoche. Look, they got Marvel pretty much now. If we're going to be doing, like, some big event, we can Pepe get a book and then Silver get a book.
I will. Yeah, the art in these issues, I mean, between Pepe Larez, who did the FF? RB Silva.
Silva did.
Silva is so good. And then who did this Road to Empire?
DeLuise, and then Rodriguez.
I did like the art in this Road to Empire. It's like that painted kind of vibe that Phil Noto meets
Ariel Loretti.
Always so good. Phil Noto Loretti.
And then you also had Rodriguez. Yeah, Javier Rodriguez do all the flashback issues.
And here's the thing. You know, that's the one time that I think is really, really dope when they do two artists on one book. If you're able to do one artist, it's like, hey, we're going to do
present
the flashbacks,
day.
And then this artist does the present day.
Yeah,
I'm all for that rather than just a lot of books that I read where the same artist tries to do past stuff, but then all the artwork to me is lost on, and it's kind of confusing.
Right. Yeah.
So in closing, it sounds like some of the if I had to make bullet points, is it's too daunting with the checklist. Like, it already kind of puts you in a mood of like, yo, this is too much. It's going to cost too much money. It's all over the place. It also sounds like it just wasn't interesting enough to really catch, you know, our attention.
I'll read it, but yeah.
The Avengers don't feel very... looking at the covers and stuff like that, I feel like the Avengers don't feel important as much. Like, I really feel like that... Like, look, when you made that Guardians of the Galaxy reference, I was like, oh, yeah, for me, I feel like those guys would probably be a little bit more important than the Avengers. Like,
because we're talking about an intergalactic story.
Yeah, and to add to that, it's just like the fact that, like, I don't Captain America is not really important in this. You have like none of the top people the I really give a shit
space,
about.
The only space person on that team is Captain Marvel. So everyone else is kind of like whatever. I mean, I don't want these people coming to Earth blowing up no shit, but like, so that's kind of where I'm at. Like, and who just finished? Was it who's been doing all those intergalactic books? Is it Danny Coates? Is it Coates?
Yeah, Coates. Yeah,
Donnie Coates.
Donnie Coates. Okay, maybe Donnie Coates should have been the one writing this book.
Yeah. How about we?
No, because it would literally just be about a sword or whatever. Like, it'd just be
again, I'm just throwing it out there. Yeah. But
I'm
we'll
saying,
see.
They're giving him that fucking symbiote Knoll bullshit.
You know what?
That makes sense, though, man. Did you read Silver Surfer Black?
Yes.
That was good.
That shit is fantastic.
But the one thing that I think is really, really dope and cool, and I was like, oh, okay, this is kind of cool that you're trying to establish that this guy is ancient. This guy's existed.
Yeah.
The one thing that gets me out of it is just like, okay, it immediately took me out of it. Like, do I respect it? Yes. Does
it
take me out of it?
What took you out of it? What took you out of it?
Well, because of the fact that, like, yo, like, who the fuck is this dude? No. Whose only claim to fame is, like, yeah, I actually own the symbiotes.
That is a really big claim to, you know what? Bottom, next topic. We're not doing this. Nope, we're not we're not doing this. Bottom, next topic.
Because I read Absolute Carnage. Carnage, so that was like, there's no reason for this.
His claim to fame is that he's a symbiote guy. Yes.
He's a symbiote guy.
Yeah. Never once have I ever, has Spider-Man faced Venom and it's been that cosmic level. Like, Venom has never been a cosmic level villain. And now you want to make that
the reason he's not a cosmic level character is because he got his spaceship and he got the suit and out of space.
Very true.
That was already cosmic.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, I'm not doing this.
I'm going.
The tradition continues. Normally, it's Walt says some blasphemous shit that I'm like, I can't believe you would say that. But I'm glad that like the table switched and is Walt getting upset. Yo,
I'm not upset. I'm just like, did you not read what you just said? You read. All
right. Which, speaking about, I feel like we're only gonna,
because this dude's probably gonna show up at the end,
Captain Marvel.
And like, Noel was behind it the whole time.
And no show behind it, like, nah, he better not be coming out here, like, twiddling his thumbs, like, they're doing it, motherfucking. What movie was that we was watching? What is it? It's not Gravity, it's,
Interstellar.
Interstellar. Oh, and he come out here like that black dude in Interstellar was when he was waiting for them for 40 years or whatever? Absolutely not.
All right, I feel like our next topic is only going to make us more heated already than we are already, but we had a really good discussion. I won't even say debate. Discussion last night.
What do you mean really good when we talk about there's a lot of yelling?
Yeah, there was a lot of yelling. But, I mean, that's just how we get when we get passionate about some of these topics. So our next topic, and I actually polled the Shortbox Nation on Instagram real quick, so I will share their feedback. But, well, me and you ended up having a discussion, a nice passionate discussion about who is the Michael Jordan of comic book artists. Now,
how do you define Michael Jordan? In the sense, if you were basically to give that person a title, are you talking about the greatest of all time? The greatest showman of all time?
The greatest of all time.
Makes the dopest shoes?
Well, I think before we really dive into this...
He does make the dopest shoes.
I do think... Well, Tinker Hatfield makes the dopest
shoes.
That's
very true.
Just go ahead and give him credit. Okay. But anyway...
Yeah, Tinker Hatfield of Marvel Comics.
But you know
Comics.
What? Tinker Hatfield's shoes would just be sitting there collecting dust if they weren't on Michael Jordan.
No, 100%. No, I agree. So, yeah. It's a union. It's
so
a
you're
union.
Talking about
union.
A writer-artist combination.
It is a symbiotic...
It's null and void.
We gotta go.
All right, no, okay, but so we talked about we were discussing who is the Michael Jordan of comic book artists, and I think some of the qualities of what defines the Michael Jordan of comic artist is just someone who's got a legacy of just being great. They've always kind of like Michael Jordan. It's just there's no denying. Yeah, he's the greatest to ever touch a basketball. this artist is someone who's the greatest who's ever maybe touched a pencil or a comic book, who's done art, and we're looking at, you know, their legacy, their impact, how others kind of, you know, other professionals and their colleagues view them. Everything that you think of Michael Jordan, who resonates, who represents that in the comic book world. So you had sided with Jack Kirby. You had a very good, compelling argument with Jack Kirby. I said Jim Lee for reasons that I'll share again. But I wanted to share real quick the Shortbox Nation's responses. And for those of you that aren't on Instagram, we posted like this poll, you know, who's the Michael Jordan of comic books. Here's some of the names that we got. Alex Ross. This was from our sponsor, Gotham City Limit. They had chimed in and said, Alex Ross. Justin, I'm famous, responded with Jim Lee. Yo, come on, that's two for Tim Jim Lee. But Wade Austin Ellis cited a few walls and said, yo, it's Kirby. 15 plus pages a week and were some of the best pages ever drawn. So, me and you've got two for two. I'm going to open it up to you, Walt, and say,
I may have to reverse my thing because.
Come on now. Wait, to who?
To who? To Jim Lee.
Fuck yes.
But the reason why
I didn't have to try that. I was like, I'm ready to like go.
But the reason why is a little bit different than what it is because, like, it's kind of a little bit harder to. Because Kirby's an architect. He created what Jim Lee could, like, build off of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like how Bill Russell.
That's what I said yesterday. Was
that what we said? Man,
I would. But that's what we were drinking. We were a few drinks in.
Well, here's the thing. Now that we're talking about it, Jim Lee's nothing without Scott Williams.
I hate this.
That's what I'm saying. Here's the thing. If you take it, I'm going to say Jack Kirby did it by himself.
No, he did not. He had inkers.
But
his most famous inker was. Oh, my God. I'm trying to blank.
Drew is on one today. Let's just come on, Drew.
So, yeah. Well, real quick, let me go ahead and share why I said.
I've looked at some Jim Lee work. Here's the thing. Jim Lee, great? Yes. Is he the greatest of all time? No.
Who is better?
Jack Kirby.
Okay.
Jack Kirby of greatest of all time? He is the greatest of all time, Jack Kirby.
I guess the better question would be this, and then we could like post this back to the nation. Because there's no reason to like go too in depth on this right now. I feel like this is an ongoing conversation.
Oh my God.
Who the top five?
Who's the top five?
Who's the top five?
Comic book artist? Oh, and it's Joe Sinnott that did that did a lot of Kirby's ink. Actually, Kirby had a lot of fucking inkers while off this, like, you know, first Google hit. But anyways.
There's so many tiny pictures on that thing.
Exactly. There's a lot of inkers that did at Kirby's.
Okay, so.
But I'll give you my top five, but I don't want to leave this MJ of comic book artists because Drew, you cannot answer. You haven't given your response.
Because here's the thing, how I feel about Jim Lee is
Jim Lee. Who's your MJ of comic book artists? It don't gotta be Jim Lee or
my MJ?
Yeah.
My Allen Iverson of comic book
artists. No. Your greatest of all time. Oh,
greatest of all time is honestly going to be Andy Kubert.
Why?
Only because he draws a very much comic book-esque type vibe. He really just like, I just like his character designs. It reads like a comic book. Sometimes it can be serious. Sometimes it can be funny. Sometimes it, like, he has a very much good realm of just drawing a lot of different things. Jim Lee.
Walt's face.
I'm just like, you're
so fucking funny.
I've read a bunch of. Here's the thing, yeah. Jim. Jim Lee draws really good books. Like, he really just draws a book. But if you go back and you try to like reread all of them, I'm not getting anything that's great. I'm getting a mediocre story with like really good artwork. That's like pairing off like a really expensive steak with like a side of like whatever the fuck.
Okay, so let me go ahead and tell you why. So real quick, I'm gonna answer Walt's question about my top five favorite artists, and then I'm going to give my supporting facts for why Jim Lee is the greatest, or is the Michael Jordan comic artist.
Fucking okay. Drew.
First of all, my top
five. Have you seen Jim Lee's
Goku? He out here just shooting half court, just jumpers, like, yeah.
And like warm up.
Just warm up and shoot half court jumpers.
So look.
No fucks giving at all right now with these replies.
To me, it is Jim Lee, Todd McFarlane. And this might not. This is liable to change, but I'm just giving you my top five.
Yeah, this is off the top.
I know
of the
Jim
head.
Lee is my top. Well, is he? I don't know. Anyways, Jim Lee, Todd, Andy Kubert, Alex Ross, Jack Kirby. I feel like those are a confident top five for me, and they might move around, but those are my top five reasons why Jim Lee is the Michael Jordan of comic books. And it kind of goes into what Walt was saying that I was trying to say yesterday is Jack Kirby is like the archetype. He set the foundation in the bar.
Of what a comic book artist is.
The reason why I don't give him the Michael Jordan is because he did not get the proper recognition until it was too late. Someone like, when we think Michael Jordan.
Basically, he's Bill Russell.
Yeah,
man.
I mean, Michael Jordan was getting his props at the time. Like, there was no point where people were like, nah, he kind of sucks. Maybe when he was with the Wizards. But, like.
He was 40.
Yeah, exactly.
He was my age out here.
So
and still putting 25 on motherfuckers.
And that might actually lead to more of my reasoning. But Jack Kirby was revered. And popular culture. You can make.
So how do you define Michael Jordan? Is he the greatest of all? Here's the thing: is he the greatest of all time, or is he the guy that just basically?
He's the greatest. Michael Jordan is the greatest of all time.
Okay, so if you want to ask me who the greatest of all time is, Jack Kirby. That's it. That I'm saying greatest of all time is Jack Kirby.
Andy Kubert.
Well, I'm saying greatest of all time, Jack Kirby. When it comes to that, Andy Kubert, Jim Lee. To me, he was six. He's top 10, but he's not top 5.
What the fuck? What the fuck? I'm sorry. What?
Nope. Jim Lee just draws really sexy and cool looking dudes.
So let me go ahead and finish why I think Jim Lee.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Jim Lee. Yeah.
Go ahead so we can break.
I think everything Jim Lee has touched has always, his X-Men run is held in really high regard. And that's some of his earliest work. Hell, his Punisher stuff was fucking love. So not only did he have hits on Marvel, but he had hits with DC when it came to Batman, fucking Superman. Then he went back to Marvel when they did Rebirth. I might have my timeline.
Heroes Reborn.
Thank you, Reborn.
And he was the only one who did the books.
So not only that, but it's also like you got to look at Jim Lee's whole career. He also went into like the corporate side and became like, really pushed DC like from behind the scene. I don't know what his role was. I think he was like a publisher.
But even still, anytime if Jim Lee is putting pen to paper,
it's a thing. It's a hit.
That shit is flawless.
And it may not be flawless, but it's guaranteed to get numbers and all of that. But what he's currently, if you look at what he's currently doing, he's doing like what this 60 drawings as a charity or whatnot. And he's like his Twitch is like a big thing too. He's got a hell of a lot of followers. So it's like, damn, this is a cat who is at this point in his career probably only doing covers, a majority of which he is only doing covers. He's probably busy as fuck with the corporate side, but when he decides to draw, it is still like, damn, yeah, you're not young Jim Lee. Of course you're not. But even your stuff now. Just like your loose stuff is like, damn.
Sorry.
It is still great.
You know what?
That's cool. I'm glad that you feel that way.
We're going to agree to disagree. I can't think of my five right now, even though I proposed the question.
Who's your top five comic book?
Right now, off the rip, head-wise, Andy Kubert, Gary Frank. I will go with.
I can come up with five. Go ahead, finish.
Who's it? George Jimenez? Jorge Jimenez.
Really, he's in your top five, and he's just like relatively new.
What are you talking about? Like top?
I'm saying like your top five all time.
All time.
And you're saying Jim Lee would not be in your top five of all time.
He'd be top ten, fair, but he's not top five.
Fair.
Frank Miller.
Okay.
Cool.
I would do.
I wouldn't. Well, he's in my top 10, not five. But
no. Frank Miller, Andy Kubert, Gary Frank, Dave Mazzucchelli, Batman,
Daredevil Reborn. Yeah,
I come back with the number right. five because I.
Well, I'm gonna go to you.
Oh, okay. Bagley, Mark Bagley.
Mark Bagley is in my top 10.
Maybe. Maybe.
Then you got Fiona Staples, then you got fucking Nick Darrington, you got like your Rios, was it Emma Rios?
I still like opinion more than like all those people.
Yeah, you gotta say opinion.
So, like, true. Who's my top five
who I've just seen, who I've just fully enjoyed if they're doing some dope shit. So we'll go with I guess it's alcohol starting to catch up with me.
Jim Lee.
Who was the person we just did? Bill Russell. Who's Bill Russell?
Oh, Jack Kirby.
Lee Kirby. John Byrne.
That's a good one.
Because he drew a lot of X-Men stuff too,
yeah,
right?
He drew a lot of X-Men,
and he did like a bunch of Fantastic Four.
Fucking George Perez.
Yeah.
No, I yeah. John Byrne's a good one to have in the top five.
Yo, have they made a Jim Lee artist proof book yet?
Fuck yeah. Oh, yeah, artist edition?
Like, yeah, the IDW shit?
IDW tends to only do older stuff for those.
Yeah, okay, cool. Jim, yeah.
But there's plenty of Jim Lee
artists.
I'll just run
with those three for now, and I'll come back. Because I don't want to put someone that's too new.
And I want to, because I want to make sure that people understand why I chose Jim Lee. It's because you could look at his career, and there isn't really much of a lull. There isn't a point that you could say, yo, he definitely fell off
Jim
and he
Lee
stayed falling off.
Darwin Cook would also be in there, too.
Oh, Darwin Cook. Yeah, oh, that's a good one. God. Yeah, that's a good one. There's a bunch that I'm sure
I know
everything. But for me, it's just like you could look at Jim Lee's career and it's always just been like, damn.
He's always dope. That was the whole conversation from last night.
He's always been a block. Not only dope in the sense of the artistic, like, you know, an artist would say, yeah, he's just really good. His anatomy's great. His shading is great. His proportions are always good. He draws really good action scenes. His sequences are great. Like, he just does it all. And he's just like, he's got the name. Just like a Michael Jordan, where it's like, yo, that's fucking Michael Jordan. Not only is he really good in playing basketball, but he's fucking cool as shit off the court. His shoes sell. Jim Lee's comic books sell, you know? Jack Kirby, unfortunately, it's just the timing. Jack Kirby's time, like, no one was really thinking about, like,
but
the
no
artist.
One thought about anything like that.
Exactly.
So that was just, yeah.
His time just worked against him. I mean, shit, Jack Kirby was getting, what did I say yesterday? Yeah, so, you know, the Marvel Age popped off. I think Kirby had a lot of love there, but when he moved to DC, I know that his
this is what we talk about new shit. Gods, but then I was like,
New Gods was not a hit until later.
Yeah.
And then when Kirby came back to Marvel, I remember reading that people just felt like his artwork was antiquated. Like it was a product of his time. It wasn't until later that people really started to respect
the tragedy. It wasn't until later they were like, oh, fuck, we fucked up.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Kirby, like, his story is a little sad. It's like, damn,
Kirby,
man.
Kirby definitely has a sad story, but he's going to have the same sad story that a lot of people from that period have.
But they all have that sad story.
It's very true.
But what you do have to give him credit for is that he is, like Walt said, an architect of, like, yo, none of this shit would be around if not for Jack
Kirby.
He's
the architect.
Like,
can you name characters that Jim Lee has basically added to the Marvel and DC universe? Because a guy that has a dick that big for fucking comic books, who has he created?
I don't need to create anyone.
Yeah, that's
he
what
just
I'm
made...
saying, but like, yo, that's how you make your name
he
known.
He doesn't need to create anyone. If his art is the hardest fucking art that exists, he doesn't need to create shit. You're talking about, you're arguing for a creator point.
Okay.
I'm not arguing about creating, I'm arguing about who is the best fucking artist.
Artist, okay.
Who can draw you
and make you look cool?
And make you
fuck.
Look cool.
Not, okay.
Do you want Jim Lee drawing you?
No.
Or do you want McFarlane drawing you?
I would rather have McFarlane over Jim Lee.
There's no fucking way.
Because Jim Lee draws the same. Here's the thing. You Google all of Jim Lee's Batman, it's going to be the same pose, the same look, and the same. He draws the same fucking Batman across the board. I'm telling you, across the board. That's all he ever does is draw.
Let me ask this question.
Give us up. Is that Batman whack?
Is that Batman that he draws whack?
No.
Okay, then what the fuck is the problem?
But here's the thing. All right, you know what? I'll agree. If you want to talk about, if Michael Jordan is the GOAT, like, let's just talk about, like, Jim Lee's not Michael Jordan. He's the Jordan shoe. That's all he's doing. He's just making different variants. He's probably a Jordan 1 or a Jordan 11. That's it. Because all he ever does is just draw the same thing over and over again in different types of poses.
Look, I'm gonna end up saying this.
Let's go ahead,
I did not experience what a blockbuster comic book was until I will continue to say this. Batman Hush might be, when I think of like a comic book that like made it into like, oh shit, this shit is so popular that, you know, like a blockbuster feel. Batman Hush, like, yo, his artwork in Batman Hush might be some of the most just goddamn perfect comic book art.
His Batman design is amazing.
You just said that it wasn't.
He said it's the same. His Batman design is the same across the board.
Yeah, across the board. His Batman design is amazing. The little when he
so,
came
he
up,
say
and,
he tired of Batman looking out across the yonder. He don't want Batman just looking out the yonder no more.
I will give Drew this bone is that yes, when you've got someone that's been in the game as long as Jim Lee and who has his own signature. Like, you look at a Jim Lee and be like, yo, that's a Jim Lee. Or whatever, art, and be like, yeah, that's a Jim Lee. His art just kind of stands out. Yeah, Jim Lee's one gripe is that, yeah, a lot of your covers tend to look the same. It's always like, you know, they're always kind of posy. They're always like in a very dramatic
pose. It's
all
shadows.
But my thing is, I'm looking at the longevity. I'm looking at their career as a whole. And Jim Lee has never had...
So your question should have been, who has the most successful career? Jim Lee.
I think that's a lot of... No, see, I feel like... But that all is encapsulated in my original question. Who is the Michael Jordan of comic books? Who has had a career of just highs and...
There are no lows. Well,
not lows, but more so their lows haven't lasted long. Like, you know, Michael Jordan definitely had some lows, but they didn't fucking last long because the highs...
The highs is too high.
Yeah, it like eclipsed it. I see where the Jack Kirby thing comes from. I absolutely do, and I respect it, but I think you have to look at Jack Kirby like the it's almost like a generational thing.
Well, I already agree. I've already moved on from that. So, I'm more dealing with this blasphemous shit that Drew was saying, but like, you know what?
Actually,
what
it is, and man. I feel like our next topic, and I want to go ahead and invite anyone listening, because I'm sure that a few people have gotten riled up or have yelled already. That is fine. I welcome it. This is what I love about discussing comic books with passionate motherfuckers is that you just get different opinions. So if you've got a top five that you want to share, shoot us an email, leave us a voicemail, just message us, let us know what your top five, why I'm wrong, why Drew's wrong, why I'm right, et cetera, et cetera. Jim Lee's still the Jordan of comic books, in my opinion. But I want to hear from our Shortbox Nation who they think, and we'll go from there, and we'll address it in our next episode. The last topic we got before we go on break, speaking about blasphemous shit, Drew, this one is inspired by you.
Thank you.
I forgot what was the name of the segment we had for Drew where he just has like questions that we kind of, you know, do discussions on. But Drew had a pretty good one. It revolves around Rick Remender. So the question was essentially, is Rick Remender bankable? Is his comic book property worthy of any more live action adaptations? And this comes from the fact that Drew feels that Deadly Class, Last Crime in America.
Last Crime in America. And
was
then they just
announced.
Yeah, all
And they
a
just
flop.
Recently announced that they're going to do a live action, whatever, movie, TV series of Fear Agent. I forget what it was. And Drew feels, you know, Rick Remender has proven that his properties are just a bust.
As a company, I would not ever back up this guy's. Like, if he's like, yo, I got this idea for a comic book, I'm like, no. I saw how Deadly Class went, I saw how your Netflix movie went. You are not profitable.
I would say, and I've not watched a Netflix movie. I didn't know that was on there.
Oh, dude, it is awful.
So it's just a bad movie.
Oh, it is.
Well, that's not Remender didn't direct the movie. He just sold the property. My thing would be this: Deadly Class was not bad from what I watched.
Mm-hmm. How much did you watch?
I didn't watch the whole thing because once they said it was canceled, I just didn't go back and finish it.
That's another thing, too. Like, they should have waited until that it was done to basically announce that it wasn't going to re-up.
No, they canceled it after the season ended.
Oh, is that how it is?
Yeah,
I thought they canceled it, like, midway through.
No, they canceled it after the season ended.
Oh, okay.
The problem with the way they do... The TV show is an indictment on how they deal with television shows. Not Rick Remender. Deadly Class shouldn't work. There's no reason why that shouldn't work. Maybe number one, it was on the Sci-Fi channel, which is not a channel that young people really watch like that.
Yeah.
It's not a young people channel.
It's very true, because my mom be watching the Sci-Fi channel all the time. Because
she's watching Twilight Zone and probably like some type of Star Trek or whatever.
Well, no,
or
like whatever Star original, they have original
some,
movies
some
that they
kind
do.
Kind of like Star Trek-y show or whatever. Yeah. Or like Hogzilla or some shit like that.
Hogzilla.
Who the fuck else is on there? Basically, that was on a bad network, or at least a network that didn't really want to like continue going on.
Mm-hmm.
Because different people come into offices, and then maybe the new president of a company doesn't feel the same way about a show that the previous person did. My take is that if you're going to greenlight a show, guarantee it 2 years.
Here two seasons.
It needs to have two seasons.
Yes. Okay.
And then that way you can actually build out the story. Because I don't know if the Deadly Class, because you told me Deadly Class completely kind of deviated from the book, right?
No, I didn't. I watched like the first three episodes and I fell asleep.
Whoever watched it told me it deviated a little bit too much from the book. To me, you could have just ran with the first six, seven issues of that book. Because that's when they like they're in school, they're hanging out, and then they go to Vegas, and then they have to murder what is it, Chino, and they kill the dude's dad. It's all kinds of shit happened in those first like six issues of that book. Just use that as the story. You just verbatim. Instead, they was telling me that the professor, like the dean, was way too involved in the story and shit. The dean's not in the comic book like that. That's a book about kids.
And I think that that's an issue when it comes to live action is that you end up casting really good actors and it's like, well, and I forgot, old boy that got casted as the dean. It was the same dude who played Wong in Doctor Strange. And I'm sorry, I can't remember the actor's name. But what happens, I think, is like, well, we've got this actor. We're paying for him. And,
you gotta use him.
Yeah, we got to use him.
Well,
so,
we can use him, but use him sparingly because, look, I have to develop the kids. The show is not going to make it if Wong is a good character. The show is going to make it if people are invested in the kids in the school. I need to make them enjoyable and relatable and all of these things. And I'm going to need two seasons to do that. And if I can't get two seasons guaranteed, then I can just keep my show.
Drew, I want to ask, what did you not like about the Last American Crime?
Yeah, dude, it was just basically just character development. It just felt like a really cheaply made Netflix movie. Like, you know how you can just watch something and be like, yo, this is cheaply made. There was nothing really. And it was just convoluted. There was nothing consistent and made sense about it.
Okay.
And when you introduce these characters, there was nothing about any of these characters that made me care about them.
Now, have you read the comic book?
Yes.
I really
enjoyed the comic book. And then when I went to go watch it, and that's the thing is, I can honestly say that these are two different entities. The movie that I watched had nothing to do with Rick Remender's. It's just like the character names that they borrowed. That's why I was like, one of the things where I was like, yo, as a person that's selling
your... Is that a Remender issue, Dan?
But here's the thing. At some point, this guy, if you're making this and stuff and your name's on it and they're basically going to put like you in the credit, at some point, you have to have a little bit of pushback and integrity for your shit.
Yo, I mean... Look,
that's what I'm saying. This is something that you put hard time, money, thoughts, love into it, and then you want to have these guys basically just come in here and fuck with your shit?
Hey, man, I feel kind of the same. I'm really curious to see what these next Mark Millar Netflix things are going to do.
Oh, because
he just legit sold all his shit to Netflix.
Which is a smart move on his thing, because a lot of stuff, he writes his books as movies.
What did you just tell me of what they did with Remender, though?
What do you mean? Oh, they fucked up his shit completely.
Okay, then.
They fucked up his shit completely.
But I think
Mark Millar would probably push a little bit more.
No. To bat to Drew, Mark Millar is basically giving these companies, hey, I literally wrote this for you to adapt, to sell as a script. Rick Remender is doing this, I don't think he wrote Deadly Class, Fear Agent, Last Crime in America, thinking it was going to become a...
TV show.
Yeah, like a live-action TV series. So I think there is a difference there that plays a big part in it.
And that's the thing that sucks, too, is a lot of these fucking companies and products and things like that, they're just like, what's selling the most? Oh, comic books are big, so let's just make whatever comic book movies you can. Like, you kind of want to think about it? Like, no, let's just make them and then figure out what's what.
Hey, look, if Remender don't give a shit about his product, I don't care either. And to be fair to, like, me as a consumer, outside of Deadly Class, I'm just out of Remender anyway. I'm just out on Remender.
Well, Drew, I'm sorry. Well, you brought up a good point, which is, does the blame, which I agree with, the blame probably doesn't lie in Remender as much as it does.
It goes to the TV company.
The fucking, the massive team that ends up involved in making this series. In your opinion, would be a good director or company that could make a Rick Remender property come to
flourish.
Life? Yeah.
MTV could have did a better job with this.
Damn. Why? What makes you think that?
The demographic for MTV is what? Teenagers. It's supposed to be like teenagers, early 20s, whatever. They're a Viacom company.
Mm-hmm.
So they have the budget. There is budget in there to develop, I don't know, let's say three probably like scripted shows a year. You take the budget from those three scripted ones and then you just knock out two seasons back, you take budget from them from for a season and a half and just knock out like basically two seasons in one filming. You just knock all that shit out and you get two seasons of a show, let it run 8 episodes per season. And then if the people pick up on it, then we can come back and do some more. And if not, that's it. But maybe MTV. Because you know what MTV needs right now? Some shit that people care about other than the challenge. And Teen Mom.
The challenge is Teen Mom.
Yeah, because I haven't watched. Man, I can't tell you the last time I turned on MTV.
And I honestly forgot it.
To add to what you're saying, the fact that to do 8 episodes, like, if you really think about it, if you spread a board, like, spread like 20 episodes, if you can do a really good 8-episode series rather than the shitty 20-episode, like, I feel like that would basically equal out, right?
I say you film, like, personally, I say you film 16 to 20 episodes at one time. You just have them there for, like, 3 to 4 months, and you just film 2 years of material right the fuck then. And regardless of how people feel about the show, I have the content. Because now we're not so much in like as a show is good or bad game. We're in a content game. It makes more sense to have shit in a tuck as taking into account of what we have right now. We're going to run out of TV shows sooner than we think. Who has been able to?
I'm not gonna lie. As soon as you said that, we are gonna run out.
Who has been filming?
Nobody.
We've been. America has been in the crib for 3 to 4 months.
This is where that HBO Max, Disney Plus library comes in.
This is where the library is coming to play. But you know what would have been smarter for all these people? To just always film 2 seasons of shows off the rip. You treat your actors like you're in a movie. So I got you here for 9 to 10 weeks. We're going to film 2 seasons of a show. 2 seasons of a show. And then you can go and make what other things you're making and blow up as like an actor or actress or whatever. And then if we need you to come back, we have you under contract for 4 seasons. If the show does these many numbers, then we're obligated to do a 3rd season. And then if it does this many, we're obligated to do a 4.
Okay, can I ask you a question now? Because it's coming over that. Do you feel like the way that you're saying this right now, honestly, there's different types of TV. You have American TV, you have British TV, you have like Japanese, like overseas TV. I'm just saying, I just like
the gender relationship. It was like American, British, and then the rest of the fucking world.
the rest of the world.
Not the rest of the world. Only because like I've been watching a lot of different movies from different parts of the world.
I think the way that we film TV over here is wrong.
Yes.
I'm not saying that the way the British do it is completely correct.
But they're doing it a lot better than we are.
Well, they leave too much meat on the bone.
Explain that part to me.
It's too many 6-episode seasons. Now, I'm not saying it needs to be 10-episode seasons. I'm saying the sweet spot is typically 8. Because my problem, which is why I've never finished any of those Marvel shows, they're all like 10 and 12 episodes. I'm not watching
13.
I'm not watching that much fucking film.
And I came back and I rewatched Punisher season 2 because I got like that itch where I was like, I kind of want to complete these shows. And I would agree. Like, I think we've all agreed across the board. All these Netflix Marvel shows, they were wildly too long.
Let me bring it back to the point of this convo so that way we can go on break here soon.
Comic book.
Yeah.
Let me wrap up by asking this. Is there any Rick Remender series that you would give, because it sounds like you're not interested in Fear Agent. Is there any that you would give a shot as far as can you name a title or a property that he's done? And then is there any director or company that would convince you to give it a shot or at least be hopeful?
Okay. The same. It would be a TV show. Mm-hmm. It would be a cartoon animation style. Mm-hmm. It would be Rick Remender's Uncanny X-Force, and it would be the same group of people that did the Earth's Mightiest Heroes, that cartoon that they did, where they took a lot of the Jack Stanley, Roy Thomas, John Byrne properties, and they basically made it into like a 2-season, 24-episode thing. I would just basically take all of Rick Remender's...
I feel like that is... That is almost too easy because it's just X-Men.
You just asked me a question. I just answered it for you.
Did he write Tokyo Ghost?
Yes. Give me an original Rick Remender property.
It's Tokyo Ghost in cartoon anime style.
That'd work.
It's Tokyo Ghost is the one.
Tokyo Ghost? Yeah. I would do Dead or Glory.
Glory Road or Dead Road.
This new one that's out right now?
The one that he just did right now.
I've stopped reading that shit.
Like, to make it a crime. But for his, you're talking about his original stuff?
Yeah, his original shit.
I don't remember much of his original stuff from Tokyo, the property of the show.
I like Tokyo Ghost.
Actually, Tokyo Ghost would be more appropriate now because of everything that's going on with the, how we are with our cell phones. Correct. And how we basically absorb media.
So if I may.
So Tokyo Ghost.
Some of his original content. Which,
Black Science.
Let's get one thing right.
Sorry.
We're not hating on Rick Remender because I feel like Rick Remender was one of the early writers that we all. We championed
him first, but the problem was that
writer.
You know what the problem became with Rick Remender?
Mm-hmm. What's up?
His stories just became, too many of them became kind of boring.
I can agree. Like, okay. Here's some of the titles that comes that
I started reading Black Science after like 25.
So he's written seven, or he's written and created and written titles such as 7 to Eternity, which I fell off, but I remember really liking what I read.
That's Opinion's Jeremy Opinion, right?
Yeah. Black Science, Low, which I do agree, I think was kind of boring. Low, Reagan Youth, Kids of the Black Hole. He did X-Force, Black Heart Billy, which I'm not familiar with. Deadly Class, Devolution, not familiar with that. Black Science, Low, to your point, yeah. Tokyo
if,
Ghost.
If they couldn't get Deadly Class to work, then that's the problem because that book is like basically Breakfast Club with weapons.
Yeah.
No, it is.
That's really good.
So if you can't get that to work, then that's the problem right there.
So, Drew, it sounds like your answer to my question was Glory Road in a kind of like animated form, right?
Yeah, animated form, okay. And then Black Science. Black Science even more. Like, and I've said this before, like if they just give a lot of his stuff just animation qualities, a lot of these dudes like – just give it. You already have it. Just make it into an animation. Just honestly make it an animation. I would love to see
sci-fi,
any of these.
You know what? Sci-fi could have an animation block that rivals. They could have an animation block that rivals Cartoon Network.
There was two things that like blew my mind. Was sci-fi missed the ball on doing a lot of what they were doing, and then the other one was basically BET missing a lot of opportunity to do a lot of what of Black Star Entertainment. Besides of what the reality shows were. Like, they had a chance to do a lot. And I'm like,
well, I have a whole other theory on BET, but we're not going to go into that right now. Because BET is the one network that has to be everything for a specific demographic. And no other channel has to do what BET has to do.
Hmm.
BET has to be church. It has to be news. It has to be entertainment. Has to be educational. No other channel has that catch-all that BET has.
Very true.
So, yeah. They didn't miss a ball.
Their comedy stuff was really good, too.
You know what? They didn't miss a ball. People just don't watch TV the way we think people watch TV. Yeah. But these are all whole other discussions that they don't pay us enough to
be. A whole other podcast.
Yeah. Another podcast for another time.
Drew, is there anything you want to say in closing before we close out this Rick Remender topic you brought up?
No, I'm good.
Okay, word. So hopefully you guys enjoy that we're about an hour and a half into very fiery, hot takes and debates. But pretty good stuff, man. I've been enjoying it so far. Let's go and take a music break, refill our drinks, kind of cool off a little bit. We'll play some music by DJ Crumbs. We'll come back. We'll do Champion Season and I'll wrap up the show from there. All right, so stay tuned. What did you tell Drew? You said we're in champion season, so there's no way he can anger you.
There's no negatives.
He's done.
Oh, yo, Short Box. Welcome back. Hopefully you guys enjoy that music by DJ Crumbs. We are going to go ahead and continue on. Normally, this is the part where we would read our emails, fan letters, play some voicemails from our listeners. But we are actually going to save that for next episode when we do our Art Adams spotlight episode. That'll be sometime next week, here in the next week or two. In the meantime, if you want to send us your thoughts, a message, you know, ask a question, champion something, rebuke something, you know, what one of us said, et cetera, et cetera. We'd be happy to accept your input, your voice, and read it or play it here on the show in our next episode. So feel free to send us an email at theshortboxjacks@gmail.com. You can leave a voicemail on our Google Voice number, 904-580-4095. Or you could leave a voice message via your phone, or I'm sorry, via your computer. Record one via your computer or laptop by going to speakpipe.com/theshortbox. And of course, we got links to all of that good stuff on our Instagram and other social media pages. So like I said, we'll save those emails, voicemails, etc. for next week. I just want to go ahead and jump into champion season, but actually, I take that back. I do got one more like kind of topic/question I want to ask you guys.
We've been doing this almost 300 episodes, and I always want to pause for the champion music song.
No, it's a good vibe. I do got one more question before we go into champion season.
Okay.
And it's because when on our break, well, you had brought up Savage Dragon. My rebuttal, my comment was, man, I've always wanted to read that.
Hey, Shortbox Nation. Sorry for the interruption. Just a few quick words from our sponsor, and we'll get right back to the show. Yeah, so this is where I pick up my comments.
Excuse me. Might I remind you the rules here at No Touch Collectibles? No loitering, no friendship, no touching the merchandise without gloves, and no free bags and boards.
Yeah, man, I know. This shop sucks. I don't even know why I shop here.
Well, we could go to Jacksonville's premier location for comic books, collectibles, toys, and more.
You okay?
At Gotham City Limits, you get 10% off comic books in your pool, 20% off trade paperbacks and hardcovers, 10% off high-end figures and statues, and free bags and boards. It's practically criminal.
And that's why Gotham City Limits is a place of the people.
How many times have you watched the Batman trilogy?
I'm ashamed to say.
Well, I mean, they're not Batman.
One time for every time the Joker has taken the city hostage.
Are you done with that?
Yeah, I'm done.
Well, let's just go take our business there.
Gotham City Limit. It's the comic book shop Jax deserves, but not the one.
All right. I get it. It's a great shop. Let's just go.
Gentlemen, what is a series that you've had on the back burner? And I call these back burner series. That's, you know, a series or a comic book or a story that you've just had on the back burner for a long time that you're like, I'm going to get around to it when I have the time, when I'm not so swamped by other responsibilities. What is some of your top back burner series that you're just,
We're talking about top two or just basically independent?
Just a few. I mean, you could rattle off a few.
Shouldn't
that you're
Wildcats.
Sinestro, of course.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a good one.
I started reading it and then kind of just didn't finish it. It wasn't that it was bad or anything. I just didn't finish it. Okay. And there were so many tie-ins in the way DC Universe was working.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't just go to the next issue.
Mm-hmm.
It was going to the next issue in the actual comic book series and not so much in the storyline. So that became like a pain in the ass. But yeah.
I think for the longest time, mine has been... Saga. Saga, only because I stopped reading Saga somewhere around... I mean, how many issues is it?
Saga's 52, I think.
It's on 52. So I stopped somewhere around like 20s, maybe 20s, 30s.
Yeah.
So that's always been like high on my priority. Because I feel like that is a reasonable... backburn. Like I could jump into it and get fairly caught up.
Yeah.
East to West is like another one where I just kind of fell off. But damn, I didn't even think about old ones. But like Savage Dragon is one because I feel like, yo, that's an interesting concept, especially from a creator side where it's like, yo, Eric Larson has been doing Savage Dragon since Image started.
He's the only Image guy who's still doing his book.
Exactly. So I feel like that might be. That might have plenty of highs and lows, and hopefully it's just a fun ride the whole time.
Actually, if I had to basically explore a whole new outlet of comic books, it'd probably be I would want to jump into the G.I. Joe and the Transformer sides.
Also, those Grim Fairy Tale books. They're like wildly sexy, but then like wildly violent. They'd be like...
Those Grim Fairy Tale comics.
I remember those Alice in Wonderland like, covers coming in because like they were actually the first one they would have like 10 covers.
Yeah, I was reading them, George. I was like, Like, I literally picked those up and was like, okay. Well,
I remember those are like predominant when we were working at the Universe of Superheroes, because there were so many customers that would come in and get that. And I mean, the covers are just too sexy not to, like, yeah, you know, notice.
I kind of want to read Vampirella now we sit here playing games. I've never read Vampirella.
What do you know about
it?
Yo, there is a really good, I don't know if it's Toshin, but it might just be an IDW book, but it's called Vampirella Throughout the Years, or The Art of Vampirella Throughout the Years. Yeah. It's just like a retrospect. And I think that might be a good introduction, only because it's like, what do I need to know about Vampirella? And let me just jump in from there.
Okay.
Because Vampirella's had
some great... How does her shirt stand?
I mean...
It's a really... Yeah.
Mysteries, man.
Very true. Yeah, it's some questions you don't even need to ask. But Drew, yours... What was yours? Yours was
I made a joke about Jim Lee's Wildcats, but if I had...
Yo, it went over my head.
I did. Honestly, like I said, it was like, if I can visit anything and really read it, it'd probably be just the G.I. Joe stuff. Because the history of the G.I. Joe...
The G.I. Joe books are way more interesting than we give them credit for.
Yes. And that kind of... I give Tim Grubbs a lot of credit, because he's always been a person that's always championed the G.I. Joe books, as well as, I mean, they have like a rich history of where they come from and like the stories that they're told. And since then, I remember when I was working in the comic book shop, G.I. Joes are coming back when they were like...
Because that movie was coming back around that time.
Yeah, when the movie's coming back out. They were like, all right, we can kind of like just kind of do like a soft restart. And they kind of had Matt Costa. I remember when Matt Costa came, and he was one of the predominant writers. And I want to say Joe Hill was another one of those writers that was writing.
Have you guys had the urge to reread like an entire series? And I'll add a little more from start to finish? Like on Reddit, I always enjoy seeing people who post like, yo, I'm rereading Spider-Man from issue 1.
Well, that's
going to
kind of come up in my champion season, so okay, I'll save okay. it. Yeah, I'll save
right,
it.
Yeah, sure. To answer your question, yes. I do it all the time, too. I've always basically, like, I kind of want to restart from number one and kind of see, like, what I can take from there.
I read Hickman's Fantastic Four, and then that always just makes me read those Avengers books all the time.
Well, we're talking about Empire earlier on this episode. It made me want to, especially going to Acme Superstore or, you know, Comic Superstore yesterday and picking up, you know, the Trial of Yellow Jacket issues. I was like, man, there is a pocket of Avengers stories from this time frame by Roy Thomas, I think, where a lot of like stuff was happening that he was setting up that I think are just now getting the accolades. So like 70s Avengers with like George Perez, Roy Thomas, and Byrne and all that. Like I want to revisit, because there's a lot of wild ass shit, like the Celestial Madonna. But then there's that really crazy story arc.
Just like saying Celestial Madonna. Yeah, that's really what's
going
on.
The only thing that he can say
Celestial Madonna.
Yeah, it's a great combination of words.
Like, would you like to create a username? Yes, I would. Celestial Madonna.
Oh, I'm sorry, that's taken. Celestial Madonna 02. Okay. Well, look, we can go ahead and jump straight into champion season then. Champion season, for those of you tuning in for the first time, is our last segment of the show. It is our opportunity to go around the table and highlight a few things within pop culture that we feel, hey, this has really resonated with me. It's dope and more people should be checking out. Our champions can be comic books, TV series, books, video games, events, etc. Whatever you name it, it's just whatever it has
Maybe
really.
You learned a new way to tie a tie. Maybe you just like, you know, went to a tapas place and you're just excited to champion tapas.
Yeah, champion it. So, like we normally do, guest co-hosts and just guests in general get first dibs. Well, I'm going to look to you.
Well,
since
Butter, you're a guest on me and Walt's podcast.
Nah.
BB Pod.
Yeah, I need to recognize.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to champion. Obviously, people have been in the crib. Can't get a bunch of new stuff. So I will champion what I maybe have championed before, but a few streaming services and a few different apps is what I'll do. So Shonen Jump is $2 a month.
Okay.
That is well worth it.
You know, the first time the first person to champion us on the short box was Tom Panditch. He sold me on Shonen Jump. And then when I talked to you on the phone like a couple whatever weeks ago, and you were like, oh, by the way, Shonen Jump, it's $2 a month. Why the fuck wouldn't I have it? I
was like, $2 a month. It was like perfect.
So how much did you, because you have this, how much reading has it expanded for you?
Well, it hasn't really expanded any reading because I just reread Bleach twice.
Wait, this is like, yo, like, and, like, when we're talking about, in the sense of like, when we're talking about comic book creators and stuff, like, those guys have to be up there with comic book creators because, as far as I'm concerned, manga and comic is just a different way to describe the comic book.
I've reread Bleach twice since I've got this thing because I'm just like a Bleach person. I just always enjoy Bleach.
Okay.
So I reread that twice and I started reading, I want to say Spy. It was something about a spy. I had to go back. I started reading that yesterday, but then I kind of dozed off, and then y'all came up. So,
can I just shamelessly fucking dram in this callback to Jim Lee real quick? Jim Lee is also internationally, like, known, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was at a comic shop in fucking Paris, and they had,
always wants to bring that. No, Spain, I'm just saying. Like,
Jim Lee was everywhere.
Yeah.
And like,
Paris is dope.
That's what I'm saying. Is
this Jim Lee live in Paris? I think he lives in Paris.
Live in Paris, California, motherfucker.
I know what you. Well, now he did an internship in like not an internship, but he was in Italy for a period of time.
Yeah,
and that's what I'm saying. Is like
he has a house out there.
Come on, like yes, Jack Kirby, architect. You know, OG, one of the greatest of all times. But Michael Jordan, comic books.
Alright.
Just that. Anyway, sorry. Well, I didn't mean to step on your so champion. You just brought up
Okay, okay, so I would recommend Shonen. I would recommend Shonen Jump just if you kind of want to figure out if you like mangas.
How many titles do you think they have right now? Because Shonen Jump is basically
a bunch of they have a lot of throwback stuff on
so
there.
So Shonen Jump is
My bad.
No, no worries. I was like, Shonen Jump is basically in the sense of Marvel. Like, if you're talking Marvel, DC, Shonen Jump is a...
They have a lot, again, they have a lot of throwback shit on there. You can kind of just get in where you fit in.
But it's a company. It's not only a company. It's a publisher, right? Shonen Jump is a publisher. Okay. So with that, they're going to have a...
So was Bleach the main driving force for you buying Shonen Jump?
That was the only driving force.
Aside from that being $2 a month.
No, the driving force was Bleach. I would have gave him $5 for that. $2 was just like a bonus. There was $2. I wanted to reread Bleach.
What do you like so much about Bleach? What is it about Bleach that...
I don't know. I kind of got into it, and then like...
Is it the concept? Is it the characters? Is it?
I don't know what it was about that book that just got me into that book, but I just got into it, and I really, really enjoyed it.
And you never cared for the anime?
I liked that. I used to watch anime, but then like... I'm always hit or miss on anime because most animes have too much fucking filler.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
When you're dealing with stories like Bleach, they have too much filler.
Fair.
So I don't like the filler stuff. I only want to read the story.
Have you tried any other manga on the Shonen Jump app?
Yeah, I just said the spy thing. But then you started talking about Jim Lee.
Sorry.
Damn.
Okay, then the other three things, the other three different services I will say is the Criterion Channel, if you like artsy films.
Uh-huh.
Shudder, if you like horror, and HBO Max, because that's just new, and then you kind of got to explore it. They got the Studio Ghibli over there. They got
Cartoon Network.
South Park is on there.
You know what? That's well said
so
about...
There's a bunch of stuff on there.
That is really well said about HBO Max, is that I'm still learning what's on it.
Like, yeah, you kind of got to figure out what's on there, and then like
their menu's kind of weird too. Well,
a lot of people don't scroll down. If you scroll down,
it'll give you all the companies.
It tells you the companies. If you scroll down like three scrolls,
like Turner Classic Music,
Show you after this. But it's a scroll down there, and you can click on Turner Classic. You can click on Studio Ghibli. You can click on Sesame Street.
DC.
DC is one of them. So you can click on all that stuff, and then you can kind of see what they got underneath those things. So that's what I'll champion for today.
Somewhere out there, Shaggy Black is listening and applauding that you brought up HBO Max without him having to be involved. So good champion.
Yeah.
Drew, what are you going to champion today?
I'm going to champion East to West.
Mm.
Only because, like, we were talking about it. I just really wanted to read a Western. I knew that East to West was done. For those who don't know, East to West is written by Jonathan Hickman. Drawn by Nick
Dragata,
Which is funny because some of the earliest episodes that we were all talking about was when East to West first came out.
Yeah,
because
I was on East to West early. I liked East to West a lot.
So, and it finished in 2019.
It should just finish like December. The end of last year, December. Yeah.
And it's one of those things where you can honestly say it's 5 years in the making and have that. But I read it for two reasons. One is I do love Westerns. And then another one is because I knew that we were coming here and I wanted to read something that I knew that you had completed. And we can kind of go back and forth and leave Barter out. Because
but, fuck that guy.
But you know what? I kind of wish you would have told me that was your thinking, because I would have reread it knowing that. Because by the time it ended, like, the last three issues came out so late after, like, the previous three issues.
Yes.
There was, like, a big gap in those issues.
And it's funny that you say that, because those three issues, the last three issues that came out are actually going to be the volume 10 of the whole story arc. So
that would make all the sense in the world.
Because it's like, and I'm not going to lie, it's like, reading it towards the end, at some point, I was like, man, I kind of don't want this story to end. I kind of wanted to go a little bit further and have 4 years of it.
Yeah, I'm a little bit salty at Hickman, though, because Hickman, I don't know if, what is it? I don't want to say The Dead and the Dying. Is that one of those books?
Dead and the Dying. That was Dead and the Dying.
Is that the one that was the black and white one?
Yes.
Okay, I would have to go in that room and look. I can't, because there was one book he just didn't remotely get close to finishing.
The Monday Murders? Was it that?
No, I know exactly what you're talking about. It's the
That's the Dead and the Dying. So The Dead and the Dying isn't one that didn't finish. The Monday Murder things, that book, I don't think that one finished either.
Mm.
But
one,
at least the main
of
arc of it finished. And got it. That was a really good book, though. So
Drew, this was your first time reading it all the way through.
All the way through. I read it when it was coming out, and then I kind of stopped during, like, issue, I want to say 25, 26 is where it kind of, like, took
off. About the same time as me, yeah.
So, yeah, when I came back, and I was like, all right, cool, I got at least 20 issues left. Let's kind of see. Bro, let me tell you right now, the fact that there is the one thing that's exciting about comic books and just reading books and not knowing what's going on is the fact that there's art out there that exists that's basically going to blow your mind. And basically,
Dragata's good. He's really good in that book.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, so the fact is, like, if you go back to Dragata did a lot of the Fantastic Four stuff. And I can tell you right now, a lot of Dragata's Fantastic Four stuff and FF that when he was hopping on is some of, like, my most favoriteest issues that, like, he's ever drawn. And to kind of see him do something, like, it's hyper-violent and kind of, like, let's kind of, like, I mean, they're, like, you could do whatever you want. In the sense of, you come to Image and you draw, like, your imagination is your limit. So just kind of see what we did here. Story execution, amazing. Art, just as beautiful. Like, to me, it was like the perfect pairing of two people. So I was watching this being just wow. As soon as I'm done, and I don't know how it is for, like, Walt or Barter, but for me, as soon as I get done reading something that's just as good, I have to either watch something or continue the whole vibe of Westerns or just epicness. And then that'll bring me down to my second champion, which is I want to champion Quentin Tarantino, Django Unchained, which I got to rewatch, and I'm telling you right now, that's a movie that ages very well, and it's very, very, like, good. And the one thing you blew my mind was yesterday we were talking about how, like, Will Smith was supposed to get that role, and he said no, like, which blew my mind because I was like, damn, I can't see anybody else doing this role but Jamie Foxx. In this movie,
Will Smith could have done the role. The problem is that Jamie Foxx's character is not the main character of that story.
Which you told me that, it blew my mind because the name of the movie is Django Unchained.
No, but the German guy has all the good lines. Yes. And he has the better role.
And
that was Will Smith's problem. This movie cannot be called Django Unchained when the German guy has all the good lines.
Okay. And because of
real quick, do you mind if I? Did you feel that way when you watched the movie?
Like, yeah, the German guy had a lot of good lines. Yeah.
Can I ask something controversial?
The German guy is Sam Jackson, and Will Smith is definitely not about to play Uncle Tom.
No,
that ain't happening.
No.
And,
like, Sam Jackson has the best. Jamie Foxx character is in essence like the fourth best character in that movie.
So who's your first?
It's Sam Jackson. It's just absurdly ridiculous in that movie.
Okay, and then would you say second is Leonardo DiCaprio?
The second is the German guy, and then Leonardo DiCaprio.
Okay.
And then Django.
And then we'll put the horse. Because the horse.
What question were you about to ask?
Well, in the sense of just the fact of this movie's being made, and
would it make sense that Django's character wouldn't have the best lines? Because it's honestly a period piece. And the fact that, like, his characterization is just like generally he just plays a slave that turns into a bounty hunter.
Yeah, but so with that same logic, then why would Sam Jackson's character be that defined?
Because he grew up in a house of education. Like, he's basically, like, he's the house dude. Like, he's there for all the time. So
yeah,
he's
can't say that word. Okay, cool. So, and you know what? Yeah, maybe you're right, but it still don't matter if the movie's called Django Unchained.
Yeah, yeah.
Look, it is.
But that's... We're arguing over Django.
Drew's champion. Yeah. I just want to hear...
Yeah, yeah. My bad.
No, you're good. Here's the thing. I wanted to talk about the movie because this movie blew my mind, and with everything that's going on with, like, the whole world, I'm watching this and I'm just like, how can somebody watch this movie and not understand of, like, in, like, we're going to get in a whole different territory, and understand, like, why, like, the whole Civil War movement and all this rebel flag and monument is controversial. Like, how can you not watch this movie and, like, turn your head?
Beginning, like, when they got him in that, that little harness.
Yeah, the head of vice.
Dude, when
I saw
that, like...
And that's a real harness.
Yeah, that's a real thing harness. That's happening. So I was talking to Butter, and I was like, do you remember when this movie came out? The biggest controversial where people were walking out of the theater because it was too
heavy
on how slaves were portrayed. And, like,
it was too heavy on that, and then he did not have any problem letting the N-word fly in that part.
Yeah, and that's why I was like, yo, and that's, and like, so then I started, like, researching this movie, and it was one of those where, like, at some point, Jamie Foxx had to, like, sit down with Leo and be like, hey,
yo,
man,
this
listen,
is our job.
This is our job, and this is how it's going to be. So, like, you
say
need
the
to,
N-word,
like,
white boy.
Yeah, say it. And it's just like, yo, it's just, but, like, I'm just like, I watched this for, like, a lot of different reasons. It's like, it's a Western.
Mm-hmm.
Quentin Tarantino, and like I'm obsessed with just the cowboys, and the whole portrayal of how everything went was amazing. And the whole movie, you thought that Leonardo DiCaprio was the boss, and then at the end you get to Samuel L. Jackson, who's basically the secret boss. It just blew my mind.
So let me ask this, and then we can move on real quick. But were you this hype when you first watched it? Like, did you appreciate it as much, or were you just kind of like, it was pretty good. It's a good Tarantino.
No, I would like to say that I was definitely really hyped on it, but you know how, like, you go away from something, and then you come back and rewatch it, and then you're like, fuck, yeah, I remember, like,
That's the way I feel about Jackie Brown and Kill Bill, too.
So, granted, it sounds like reading East to West hyped you up, got you.
Definitely hyped me up, because East to West has that Western feel to it. And the thing, when we talk about it, and Hickman wrote... Sorry, let me start over real quick. I would be... The fact that a lot of stuff is... let's talk about it real quick. Let's just get really, really real, because I'm not going to... Like, I don't want to stop and basically just pussyfoot around and stuff like that. A lot of the shit that's happening in the real world is fucking crazy. This is a different world than when we started for. Before this COVID-19 shit happened, the world has definitely changed. A lot. And a lot of the stuff that they're basically harping on... East to West, reading East to West was so powerful to me, because you're dealing with the Confederates, the Union, the Brotherhood, United Nations, which is basically like Indians. And Hickman was basically doing all this stuff that's just like, damn, I'm getting more education out of this than when I went to elementary school or high school.
Well, that's by design, but this is neither here nor there. I mean, we can go into that another time.
Yeah, we'll definitely go into how the school system that's going to be a whole other thing.
That is not a short box territory. That's
no, not at all. This is supposed
that's
to be
a drunk
fun,
box.
Like a,
that's a drunk box outside, bro.
Yeah, yeah. But so I'll just tell you right now. So East and West, if you guys don't understand what's going on, I'll give you kind of like a little bit of a background. And I'm sorry that I'm taking up too much time, but this is something that I want to say. It's basically about, like, you have the Four Horsemen of Apocalypse trying to bring about the end of the world. Civil War happened, and this is not the world that we live in. This is a whole new world.
The Three Horsemen of Apocalypse. We have
the Three Horsemen of Apocalypse.
And they're missing a fourth.
And they're missing a fourth.
Yeah, because Death was like... Death didn't want to be Death no more. He wanted to, like, wipe up... He fell in love with the Chinese lady. You forgot about the Chinese people.
The Chinese is like that. So you're dealing with all these different nations. And
the Maoists. They were the Maoists.
Maoists. The House of Mao. And let's just tell you right now, in reflective to how the world is right now and society is reflected, we got basically...
China, America, and then you got a lot of people that are just basically divided between like what's right and what's wrong. And I think Hickman is doing a really good job of just addressing all this stuff. History, it's in the books. It just tells you like, yo, these are what these people fought for. This is what these people fought for. But it just blew my mind because like at some point, like, yo, this is a story you wanted to tell. He told the story about how the Chinese Republic is basically a power. You have the Brotherhood, which is basically all the slaves that fought for the Union and Confederate. Was like, nah, fuck that. We're going to start our own company, country, and this is what we're going to do. We're going to be in St. Louis. Same thing with the Republic of Texas. The more I think about the history of Texas and read about Texas, Texas is actually kind of scary. That's a big-ass country that if the world were to fall apart, they can divide themselves into three different nations.
Well, California could do the same.
That's what I'm saying. Like that's crazy to me that that's something that does exist. It's
yeah,
basically...
Well, I mean, yeah. Not today.
Not today. I'm just thinking...
Well, I guess maybe later today, but
yeah,
not now.
Yeah, yeah. Not now.
Yeah, yeah.
I forgot where I was going with all this
stuff.
Are you done, champion?
East and West is just good. I'm so sorry. Look.
How dare you, Walt? You stepped all over this man's
chair. Well, I didn't want to step over it, but now, because what is going on is that now we're going to start talking about, like...
Other stuff.
We're going to start talking about the Republic of Texas, and then we're going to talk about the annexation of, like, California, and basically how California, like, when they got California, is pretty much from Oregon all the way west to Colorado, and then all that stuff that went around Texas was what California truly was.
Yes.
And then states just started dividing off from that. But the Republic of Texas is just the Republic of Texas.
Yes.
Texas basically has always just been Texas.
You're trying to stop us from becoming the history box and the conspiracy
box. Yeah, we are not the history box right now.
All right,
yeah. So, like, I mean, long story short, this book is really, really good.
Read the history of Texas also.
Definitely. It's very eye-opening, and, like, I would be ignorant and be like, you know, no, like a lot of the stuff that they're talking about basically kind of bleeds through the problems that today we are as a society.
But I will say this, and this is to be a good writer, you have to be a good reader.
Mm. And Hickman's well read.
These things do not exist in a vacuum. You need to know the stuff you're writing about.
Well said.
So, yeah.
I don't really want to follow up.
Yeah, okay, but now what do you want to
do? I'm like, yo, Sesame Street is back on, you know, like some shit. Now, I got three champions, and I will proudly talk about them. The first one up is a new comic book from Image. It's called This Texas Blood.
Texas.
Well, I mean, speaking about like Western, and let me make, no, I'm sorry. It is That Texas Blood. I apologize. It is written by Chris Condon. And Jacob Phillips, who I believe is the brother of Sean Phillips, but Jacob Phillips is the artist. Or, I'm sorry, the colorist on Criminal. He colored like My Heroes Are All Junkies, Criminal, etc. He teamed up with Chris Condon, who's the writer of this series called That Texas Blood. It is, speaking about westerns, it is a kind of neo-western story. It takes place in Paris, Texas. It is kind of like at No Country for Old Men vibes. It centers around a 70-year-old sheriff here in Paris, Texas. His name is Joe Bob Coates. It's got crime, mystery, it's supernatural. Only issue one is out right now. Issue two comes out later this month, I think on the 29th. But I champion it because, one, it was meant to be a movie script that Chris Condon was shopping around. I don't think any studios were biting. He got the idea to go about making it a comic book, and ever since then, I think his words are like, I can't see it being anything other than a comic book. Him and Jacob Phillips, of course, are working on this. Between the writing and the art, it's just a moody book, man. Like, it just captures that sense of like danger that is only prevalent in Texas. And if you've ever been in Texas, it's just like I feel like you might know what I'm talking about. Like, that heat, that sense of like grandiose, that attitude that Texas has got, and then just that underlying sense of danger that's always like, you know, in Texas, especially in like, you know, pop culture and shit that takes place in Texas. But like I said, it centers around the 70-year-old sheriff in this small town. There's some things going on. That first issue doesn't give you too much, but the one or two panels that kind of make you, that incorporate that supernatural vibe is enough to make you go, all right, I'm definitely going to stick with this. So if you're a fan of Criminal, I think you'd be a fan of this. If you're a fan of Westerns, I think you'd be a fan of this. If you like No Country for Old Men, this is definitely the book for you. It's only on issue one. I'll also sub-champion something that these two are working on together. So this book was supposed to come out months ago, but of course COVID hit, comic shops were closed. They couldn't release the book. They weren't too certain on what was going on. I think Chris Condon, the writer, was getting kind of rather upset, kind of, you know, trying to keep his spirits high. So him and Jacob Phillips ended up creating a Patreon. So for as low as a dollar, if you support them for a dollar a month, you get access to their comic book that they're creating on the side called Brutal Dark, which is more of a noir detective.
Do you find this
story
on their website, or who? Like, where would you have Patreon to go to find this?
Patreon. Okay. So Patreon.com is where you'll find Brutal Dark. It's only a dollar to support, and you get like the digital download of this comic book they're creating on the side. They created it because Texas Blood, they weren't sure what's going on, but Texas Blood is back on the stands. Issue one was fantastic. I recommend supporting these guys. It's just really good stuff. Second thing I'll champion is Descender, and a big shout out to Shortbox alumni and guest of the show, Brian Brumleave, who actually let me borrow the first volume of Descender. The robot, or the image story robot.
I read half of that and then fell off on that.
I read issue one, liked it, and you know how some things go—you just kind of fall off or you forget about it. Well, he let me borrow the first trade for Descender, which collects issues one through six, I believe. But for those unaware, Descender is a comic book published by Image Comics. It is written by Jeff Lemire, who we've definitely championed and talked about plenty of times. And it is drawn by Dustin Nguyen, who is a fantastic artist who incorporates a lot of like watercolor painting and drawings and such. It centers around a young robot boy by the name of Tim 21 and his companions. They're trying to stay alive in a universe where all androids have been outlawed and there's bounty hunters on every planet.
He's a particular special android, if I remember. Yeah.
So it's kind of like a cosmic version of like the Odyssey, whatnot. So Lemire is pitting humanity against machines and world against the world, and he's creating like this very like epic story involving space, androids, and whatnot. So if you're a fan of things like Astro Boy, Blade Runner, or anything that involves like androids and like the question of consciousness and whatnot, I think you'd really enjoy this. The first trade at least was phenomenal. Like, I was not expecting it to really pick up after issue two. The premise almost like is almost rather innocent, but the way things transpire is enough to, it's definitely got an edge to it. So I recommend anyone that's into any of those things I mentioned to check out Descender. I want to go ahead and thank Brian for letting me borrow that first volume, because that was rather fun to read. Last thing I'll champion is a comic book sale, man. It is a digital comic book sale. Are you guys familiar with Humble Bundle?
No.
Yeah.
Okay, so you are. For anyone that's not aware, it's a website that partners up with just different companies. So they partner up with video game companies, comic book companies, software companies, and they end up doing really crazy sales, like almost liquidation sales. And the one I'm champion is their Image Comic Showcase Bundle. So they've got different tiers. It's like, for a dollar, you unlock the digital versions of like certain comic books. And some of the comic books are like, top tier Image books, like Invincible, Curse Words by Charles Soule, Cobra, Buzzkill by Donny Cates, Redlands, which Walt, you've championed plenty of times.
I love that book.
Stray Bullets.
I was just thinking about my favorite artist on the planet.
Sex Criminals is available on there. So they've got different tiers. They've got like a dollar tier. They've got a $8 tier. And then I think they have a $15 tier and then an $18 tier. So every tier has got a certain number of comic books that you could buy. I went ahead and just paid the $18 to get all of the comic books. And when I tell you it is an insane bundle. It's like I downloaded over 200 trades. Like, it is not just single issues. You are buying the trades of the series. So it's like Invincible Volume 1 and 2 trade. All of the books I mentioned and many more. Like, the whole trade paperbacks in digital form. So for $18, I got over 200 trade paperbacks in digital form. You could download it in whatever format you want, PDF, CBZ, CBR. You could upload it to, your iPad or whatever digital comic book reader you use. The best part is that it goes towards charity. So the particular charity for this Image Comics bundle is Book Industry Charitable Foundation, and then the Hero Initiative, which I think we're all familiar with being comic book collectors. And when you're at checkout, you can tell them, hey, I want, and it also goes towards Image and then, you know, the platform. But you could pick, like, yo, I want more money to go towards this, you know, charity or this. You can kind of fluctuate where it goes. But for $18, it is probably the best deal.
That's the best deal I've heard since this Shonen Jump deal.
Yo, it is bonkers. Like, it took me a long time to download everything. And it feels good to know, like, all right, I paid $18, got all of this, you know, in a legal fashion, and it went towards charity.
I got this legally.
I didn't have to go through, as Walt said, nefarious actions to get this. So I highly recommend it. I know Humble Bundle has done other comic book sales in the past. I think they teamed up with, I cannot remember the other name of the comic book company. I'm sorry. But I know they've done other comic book sales before. But they've done video game sales. They've done, like, so many different sales. And it goes towards a good cause. I think this Image Comic Showcase bundle is up for another 10 days, 19 hours at the time of this recording. So there's probably enough time.
Is this just a one and done, or do you think they're going to come back with another type of bundle?
They'll probably do a different, like, company or something. I forgot the name of the company that did the last one, but it was the same company that does Darkness. Oh my God. You know what the comic book Darkness I'm talking about?
Yes. Top Cow.
They did a Top Cow.
Top Cow, I wanted to go Black Mask. But
the last one I'm thinking of is Darkness and Witchblade. They did, like, a big, like, yo, you can get every issue of Darkness and Witchblade. So, yeah, that is my third champion. Highly recommend it for anyone that enjoys reading their comics digitally, and they've been wanting to kind of dive into the Image Comics library. There's plenty to choose from. So shout outs to Austin, actually, on that one. He gave me the heads up on that one. So, gents, that is the end of our episode, man.
Definitely.
It's been a long one.
Well, it is always a pleasure. I know, you know, making our way down here and just hopping on the mics, it always feels like old times, and it's nice to just see you doing so well. And
yo, it's never a struggle. It's always get like, oh, yo, no, like, no, yo, no, it's no. Like, yo, I'm gonna pick up.
I want the listeners to know we got here on Friday. It's Saturday, you know, while we're recording this. We got here Friday and essentially recorded, you know, talked a whole, you know, two podcast worth episode. So it's effortless.
Thank you for having me.
Drew, do you got any closing? Well, actually, Walt, do you got any closing remarks? Maybe, Drew, you got any closing remarks?
I just wanted to be like, yo, Walt, your birthday coming up. Like, yo, how do you feel, man?
I feel blessed to be here. Thank you for having me.
Drew, any closing remarks?
No, nothing. I just hope you guys are being safe and washing your hands.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Dad. All right, that is the end of our show, Short Rocks Nation. Thank you for hanging out and sharing your most valuable commodity with us, which is your time. Thank you. It is appreciated. I do want to go ahead and plug in once again. If you feel inclined to directly support the creation of more episodes and help us keep the lights on here at Short Box Studios, consider becoming a Short Box patron. We'll reward you with bonus episodes, interviews. You'll get commercial-free episodes as well as exclusive merch, live show invites. Check out what we have to offer for your contributions. And I'm talking like the price of a coffee, you know, as low as $1 a month.
If you find coffee for $1, let me know. Like, hit me up.
Check out what we have to offer on our membership site, patreon.com/theshortbox. And yeah, I think we are good to go. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Like I said, if you guys want to go ahead and share your comments, gripes, champions, your top five comic book artists, shoot us an email at theshortboxjack@gmail.com. Send us a voicemail at 904-580-4095. Speakpipe.com/theshortbox. And yeah, next episode we will be doing our next installment of our artist spotlight series, which is Art Adams, as voted by our Short Box patrons.
Not Jim Lee. Cool. I just made sure. All right, cool. Top artist, Art Adams, not Jim Lee. Coming to you.
Hey, we've got. Don't worry.
Nobody voted. That means nobody really cares about Jim Lee. It's Art Adams.
I'm going to mute your mic. With all that being said, listeners, stay safe, stay healthy, take care of yourselves, take care of each other. In the meantime, continue to make mine and yours Short Box. Keep it geeky.
Yo, what happened to peace? Peace.